Comrade Jikileri Mashlango, the coach, is coming late. And Comrade Mashlango, sitting a bit late. He'll be here shortly, I imagine. So we'll note the apologies in a minute, unless you want to discuss each one. No, thank you. Secondly, I'm not going to welcome everybody because you know who you are. Civil society will introduce themselves. Over then to Kosar to Matthew Park. Thank you, my dear. Thank you. I'm here as the chair of an ANC committee. Thank you. Over to you.
Thanks, Comrade Polipiro member. Good morning, Comrade Chairs, members, colleagues, friends. My name is Matthew. I'm from the Congress of South African Trade Unions. And just to thank the committee for giving us time to raise our concerns as COSATU. But look, Chair, I won't, because of the time constraint. I know we've only got about 10 minutes, and it's quite a busy schedule. I'll just cut to the key issues and not go through the entire MTBS. So for us as COSATU, there's about eight key macro issues which are really at the heart of the issues. I think, Chair, look, we had high expectations for the budget statement, given the extent of the economic, the governance, the budgetary crisis facing the state and the economy and workers. We had really hoped to see that the government would kind of give a feedback on the stimulus package, a clear action plan for government, for industry to roll out the Jobs and Investment Summit commitments, additional measures to turn the economy around, measures to save the SOE, to deal with the debt crisis, and even to expand progressively the Reserve Bank mandate. I must say, Chair, we were quite disappointed on all fronts as COSATU. Without stating the obvious, as COSATU, our mindset is informed by what we believe is a 40% expanded unemployment rate. We have thousands of workers across sectors of the economy being retrenched every single month. In addition to that, you've got 400,000 young people entering the economy annually. In exchange, we've got a 1% at best jobless growth rate. And of course, we have the triple challenges, the fiscal crisis, declining tax revenues, dangerously high levels of debt rising, and of course, the ESCOM and SOEs. So, Chair, we really expected much more from the budget statement. We really expected clear plans, clear timeframes, clear interventions. We didn't find that. We had a very progressive Jobs and Investment Summit last year hosted by the President. The second investment summit now is starting today. But there was no reference to it in the budget statement of significance. No action plans by the state. The state gives significant subsidies, rebates, incentives to industry and the private sector, like employment tax incentives, but there was no effort to hold the private sector accountable for those investments by the state in the budget statement. Chair, we were quite disappointed that even in the budget statement, there's no reference to an overall government jobs target, even a modest one. There was about five departments which had some jobs targets, but even those few departments are far behind them. Chair, the President has done good work to attract new investments in the past year, but no kind of assessment of the impact of those investments. But Chair, on the positive side, there are some initial green shoots in the economy that we've seen. New car plants have been opened in Gauteng, KZN, Eastern Cape in the past 2 months. Even yesterday, an auto manufacturing hub was opened in Pretoria. You would have seen last week, the President opened our first cell phone manufacturing plant in Durban. But there's no effort to even reference these positive achievements, to kind of give a positive story to workers, to investors, to the nation, that we are making some progress. Chair, having said that, I think we do welcome in the Treasury statement the commitment to table the Public Procurement Bill, which will be a key tool to drive localization and grow the economy. We hope that it will reach Parliament before February solo. Chair, I can also report that we're now scrap metal export tax. Finally, that's also a positive achievement. But again, we're not mentioning these things in the budget statement. And these are kind of the practical interventions we expect government to sell, if I can be that blunt. Chair, look, I think we all saw the ESCOM special paper, and obviously that's the ticking time bomb facing the state. What we really expected in the budget statement, and that is referenced by Comrade Pravin Gordhan the day before, was a plan to deal with the debt issue at ESCOM. There was no reference to that plan in the budget statement. And until you can deal with that debt plan, we're not going to save ESCOM. But Chair, look, I mean, as COSATU, we're not just throwing stones at government around ESCOM. We have made a proposal on how to save it. We think the first thing is to have a forensic audit of all expenditure, all contracts, starting with coal, because the looting is continuing. Just because one family has moved to Dubai, it hasn't stopped. Chair, those who have looted, we want to see them in prison. in Orange overalls, the assets are confiscated. We're not seeing that. And we know who these people are. There have been countless commissions. We don't know why the incompetent manager, which has mismanaged ESCOM, is not being dismissed. But I think, Chair, we are pleased that the three ministers have started meeting with the coal suppliers, the IPP suppliers, to reduce, to take a haircut. We'd also want to see, Chair, that the Minister of Energy amend ESCOM's mandate to allow it to produce its own renewable energy. But, Chair, also, ESCOM, you can't allow it to manage itself. Those guys are clueless, to be honest. The tariff levels are unaffordable. They're pricing ESCOM out of the market. And their solution to the crisis at ESCOM is simply to make tariffs higher, which is decreasing demand. So you have to make tariffs affordable to consumers, to industry, to neighboring states. Chair, you will see countries like Botswana have stopped buying electricity from us because we are too expensive. So there's really a death spiral. Chair, the Minister of Finance makes good noise about dealing with Soweto defaulters. Not much noise about the government defaulters or the municipal defaulters. We really need a serious campaign to deal with those defaulters. Otherwise, you will just be pumping in money to a bottomless pit. Chair, we really want to propose a single suspense account for all payments to ESCOM, because you can't trust municipalities, etc., to do it. We need a serious debt restructuring plan, and we can do it. So I think the special purpose vehicle is an opportunity, and that all of us, like with the Edcon deal where we had in February this year, from labor to government to industry, we all take a haircut. We all contribute something to save the national asset. But you must deal with the looting and the mismanagement. But our condition, Chair, for that kind of investment by labor is no privatization, no retrenchment. There must be a clear, just transition plan for workers who are affected, for communities, for the coal industry in particular, in Mpumalanga. And longer term, Chair, we'd really want to see a serious engagement around producing electric vehicles locally, because that's going to create a sustainable, mass, long-term demand base for ESCOM, in addition to other benefits. Chair, I think we're also quite disappointed. You know, we're 18 months down the road in terms of the change in administration. We still don't have turnaround plans for the other SOEs, SAA, SA Express, SNBC, to know. We don't know what we're waiting for. Chair, we must also say we don't understand why a minister would say SAA is a piece of rubbish, but let's get an equity partner. That's not how you're going to sell an equity partner. So we must be serious about these things. Chair, PRASA is collapsing. There's no plan in the budget statement to save PRASA or Metro Rail, and that's having an impact upon workers getting to work, industry being effective. But we are quite pleased that finally Treasury has recognized the crisis in the RAF, which is the other ticking time bomb, and they are now committing to stop delaying the road accident fund and the RAPS bills, which they had delayed previously in the fifth administration. So please that will start moving. Chair, look, I think as COSATU we were quite irritated by the continuous attack upon public servants' right to earn a living wage. The problem is not nurses who earn 180,000 rand or police officers who earn 200,000 rand. The bloated nature is at the top level. We think the change was a little bit disingenuous to manipulate some of the stats. The debt bill has been stable at about 35%. In 94, Chair, we had 34 million South Africans, 1 million public servants. Today we have 57 million South Africans, 1.1 million public servants. We have 128,000 vacancies, which is having a huge impact upon service delivery capacity. We really wanted to see Treasury come with a plan to reduce the fat on top, to reduce the amount of deputy ministers from 34 to 5, reduce the amount of councillors, MPs, the management, etc. But we are quite pleased, Chair, that the Minister finally agreed to come and engage Labour at the Public Service Bargaining Council, because we're ready to engage. We recognise that the state is in a serious crisis. And we want to also propose, Chair, that we have one single public service bargaining process. So the public sector entities must fall under the PSCBC, the SOEs must be brought under it. Because you'll find there's a huge ballooning in the bill at the SOEs. So your ESCOM has got 800 managers earning above 2 million rand, far above the DPSA limits. Chair, we really hoped to, around the expenditure, to see much more action by government to deal with the 10% of the budget we lose to corruption and wasteful expenditure, the 50 billion rand in infrastructure under expenditure, and even some of the blinging expenditure. You know, you've got about 4 departmental head offices, Chwane Municipality, Sandral. We're spending 13 billion rand on head offices. That's equal to the VAT hike that we are saying about nurses who are earning pocket change. We think there should be a prioritization to more productive expenditure, for example, towards DTI industrialization. And of course, we must tackle the municipalities and SOEs who behave like rogue elements. Chair, I won't go into the departmental kind of major offenders. I've listed them there. Offenders that have come to the appropriations public hearings. But if we're serious, then why do we have a budget statement where you have these departments with serious under-expenditure, complete failure to meet even a quarter of the targets? The sanitation crisis schools, we kick the target down the road every year. You have about 700 million rand under-expenditure around bursaries for students. SAP has got under-expenditure of 700 million rand. The electricity electrification project has been reduced from 190,000 to about 180,000 houses because of a shortfall of 250 million rand. Yet in the same department, there's under-expenditure for the exact same amount. There's no reference to the looting at the state security agency, under-expenditure by small businesses or health. So, it's difficult to take government seriously if they can't manage its own house properly. Yet at the same time, we're implementing austerity, which is going to starve the economy. Just coming to the end here.
Okay. He's very good normally.
Just the last two senators' chairs. I think we're pleased that the Treasury has announced they're going to review the taxes. We hope they'll be done in a progressive way to zero the bleeding, make sure the rich pay the full amount. I think in particular, Chair, we want to see a crackdown on the borders, the customs, where SARS only inspects 5% of the containers coming into the country, not 100%. And that obviously bleeds the manufacturing base. So I think, Chair, going the way forward, because I've been intimidated by the product bureau member, we're running out of time. Moody's, I think, has been very generous to us by giving us one last chance. We have to get our act together by February, so we are engaging with the Alliance Political Leadership, the Presidential Working Committee, to see how can we really save the ship together coming forward in February. Otherwise, we won't have another chance. Mm-hmm. Next year.
Yeah, I'm slightly over. Can I just draw attention to new members and the people who haven't come here before? Welcome, Professor. The thing is that, look, we do it in 10, sometimes 12, sometimes 15 minutes, depending on the number of applications for oral hearing. But you must remember the research staff read every submission, and the chairs take responsibility overall. We split them up and we read them all. We read every comma and every full stop, and then we process the report. So it doesn't mean the be-all and end-all is exchange here. And then I'm not sure how we manage the program here because it's a new era, but previously we had a particular approach. Let's move on to the next people. They're the Budget Justice Coalition. I don't know, Chair, what you've decided on their application. They're not here yet. Yeah, just to draw your attention, we got a letter from the BJC, saying that because they represent so many organizations, to squeeze them into 10 minutes is not reasonable. COSATU could argue, because they represent 1.9 million workers, and they represent, how many employers you now have? 17. You're entitled to more than 10 minutes, and then others will squeal. But in the past, to be quite honest, Comrade Chair, we did allow them some leeway, particularly on the VAT matter, because they carry them. So it's over to the committee and the new chairperson to decide on that. They're the major committee here. Okay, over then to the budget, just Rural Health Advocacy Program. Where are you? Ah, yes, over to you. Thank you. Sorry. You see, the other thing that is drawing my attention to is that you've got Tobacco Institute, British American Tobacco, Limpopo Tobacco, Black. There's four of you there. Now, I know there are rivalries at stake, but it's unfair to take up so much of time. I can merely offer my own opinion. You can't have 40 members. So I would ask members to think about it. It's the call of the members, not of the chair. You, the majority, you decide. So over the tea time, over the break there, or the discussion time, can you meet and decide? We will give you tentatively, let's decide now. As I would like to propose, Comrade Chair, first you comment, that we give them 7 minutes each. If that, what do you feel? I don't know, Comrade Chair. Maybe you're pleased. 2 minutes for them. I mean, there are four of them, but remember they are rival organizations. You can't expect COSATU to do PEDUSA and so on, or you can expect one structure.
Chair, with great respect, if this was communicated to us before the time, we would have accepted. But we've had people fly all over the country to come here. We've been allowed 10 minutes. So
can you settle for, okay, 5 each and give you 20 minutes or 7 minutes each? What does the committee feel? The chairs will be guided by the committee. Is it 5 or 7, but it's not 10? Quick, please.
Ask a different message from each of them?
Which one here is there?
Not a vastly different message, Chair. No, Chair, with great respect, Chair, if we knew that some people wouldn't have incurred the cost to come here.
We should have conferred with the Chair, it's true. And we accept. But ultimately, you know what? The two chairs have to accept responsibility. We should have intervened. Right? We can't dump it on the staff. You know, politicians, always somebody else is to blame. Well, I take personal co-responsibility. I can't speak for the chair. I should have intervened, as I often do, but normally it's the standing committee on finance that takes major responsibility, not the, you know, the NGO committee you respect. But I'll take responsibility. I apologize. 7 minutes, okay? Can we compromise? It's a botch up on our side, at least on my side, okay? I'll take responsibility. Sorry about that. First time since 1998 such a thing has happened. Thank you.
It's not fair, Jay. It's not fair.
But remember, we're not obliged.
Except the Constitution and the law and the Constitutional Court, we are not obliged. You know that, in this Parliament. We are only obliged to have written, ask a professor, a written representation from you. Whether Parliament invites you for an oral hearing or not is the discretion of Parliament. Frank Jenkins, are you here? Frank, are you here? He's not here. He will tell you that.
I'm here.
Yeah?
Well, Chair, there's no baseline. We don't have to have public hearings, but we need to facilitate public involvement, and it depends on time and the intensity of what we do. But you're correct, Chair. You summed up correctly.
Believe me, my friend. I've been here 1,000 years, right? We've been here, right?
It's all good, Chair. We were told yesterday, fine. But to come here and tell...
Write to the speaker and condemn me.
No, I won't do that, Chair.
No, the issue of precedent, I'll say I'm sorry.
No. Right. I just want my 10 minutes.
You're not going to get it. It's 7. Okay, Dion? Okay, I'm taking counsel. For the first time in how many years I've been chairing? 1998, I've watched up. Okay, I should have looked at it, and my co-chair is new, with due respect to him, and he'll learn the lesson from now. Okay? And committee members, don't fold your arms. If you see something like this, you're a shadow minister or something, you should contact us and say, why come there's 4 of them there? You might even snide your remark, are they paying the ANC and so on? Then you'll irritate us and we'll convince you it's not true. Okay, what's your name? Jordan, eh? Jordan. Yeah.
I just wanted to say, Chair, there's also, I mean, I appreciate that you've taken co-culpability, but there's also some irresponsibility on the part of those presenting, because it would have been very easy for Mr. Parks to list all 17 of his affiliates and each of them give 10 minutes, and actually that would have been much better, because I much would have rather spent the time debating with his affiliates than that. So I think, you know, let's just accept the compromise.
Dion, you want to say something? Good, covered. Okay, can I say something? You know what? The more you raise an objection, the more... Yeah, they accept it, yeah.
Okay, fine. Over there to Rural Health Advocacy.
Okay. Thank you, Comrade Chair. And welcome, Comrade Chair Mazengwani. It's a privilege to serve under you. To all the new members, congratulations on your election, and we look forward to working with you over the next 5 years. My name is Russell Rensburg. I'm from the Rural Health Advocacy Project, and I think we're primarily here to talk about those people that aren't included in those numbers. You know, first thing we want to start off by, first of all, used to the technology. We acknowledge today that we, as a country, we face some significant challenges. You know, our GDP continues to trend downwards. You know, a lot of these are attributed to multiple factors, including policy uncertainty, electricity supply shocks, low investment levels, and just the general distrust in the state and in the government's ability to respond to these things. While we're also acknowledging the worsening fiscal position is also threatening our government's ability to maintain existing levels of service provision and infrastructure investment. But when we take a moment to look behind the numbers, you know, StatsSA has identified consistently high levels of unemployment, low quality of education, provided especially to black South Africans, as an inadequate and poorly located infrastructure. South Africa's resource intensive and therefore environmentally unsustainable growth path, an ailing public health system, and insufficient public service is contributing to a lack of social cohesion and a general breakdown in the social contract that set up our constitution. Through our work at the Rural Health Advocacy Project, we aim to create a more equitable, healthy future for all South Africans, particularly those living in rural and former homelands. Now, when we think about rural, I think internationally we generally think about old people who go off to the countryside to retire. But in South Africa, the dynamics of rural populations is much more complicated. You know, more than half of rural populations are under 35, with a big percentage of those also being young, school-going children. And rural communities particularly have unsustainable livelihoods, and they're made up of 52% of women, with more than 1 in 5 adults living in abject poverty. With the poverty currently, that's around 441 rand per person. So it works out a household surviving on less than 2,500 rand a month. Now, any of you who have taken a walk down the aisles of ShopRite or Woolworths or Checkers will know that 2,500 can barely meet your food needs. And this is more than half of our population who are surviving on this. So as we think about ratings, downgrades, and budget cuts, they sound quite seductive and think as the path to prosperity, but in reality, the vast majority of our population will continue to suffer as others prosper. When we start looking at the age cohorts, the poverty headcount is particularly high amongst women. Now remember earlier this year, I think there's a beautiful poster outside these offices commemorating the deaths of young women, but you know, gender-based violence is structural. It's also rooted in our communities, and if we continue to under-support the advancement and the development of women, we just create a recipe for further disaster. There's also a particular gender dimension to poverty, in that it affects women much more acutely than it affects men. And the incidence of poverty is highest amongst women in the rural traditional settlements, meaning that's former homelands. Men also have a higher expenditure compared to women. In the 10 years between 2008 and 2018, the unemployment rate had increased from 21.5% to 28%. When we look at the quarterly labor market survey more recently, I think the bigger problem is for us is the structural employment or the discouraged work savers. And I think it's as bad as now 7 out of 10 young people are not in employment, and this is the future of our country. Investments in health can be quite transformative. You know, but if you think of the 20.4 million young people aged 15 to 34, close to half of them are not in education, training, or employment. Right? Statistics, South Africa outlines that 57% of the unemployed are those with an education level of less than matric, which means that their pathways to sustainable employment is rather bleak. You know, there's a higher working age ratio than dependency ratio. The country should be able to harness the skills and the talents of what many call a demographic dividend, but because of some of these structural factors, there's limited pathways to economic advancement for the rural poor. The triple challenges of poverty, inequality, and unemployment in South Africa are widely acknowledged, but many of the measures that we come up fail to address these issues. And even when we've had periods of extended economic growth, like early in our democracy, it was interesting that youth unemployment has been consistently high. I mean, studies from the National Income Distribution Survey, which has been tracking these things since the beginning of democracy, puts youth unemployment in 1996 at around 60%. So, the health sector, we all know that much discussion is around the national health insurance as a transformative mechanism to our country. But, you know, investments in health is more than just investments in improving healthcare. It also provides an opportunity to present some kind of economic catalyst in areas that otherwise would not receive economic development. The SIACA Youth Asset Study, which we included in our written submission, found that one of the biggest barriers to youth advancement was youth agency, meaning that youth can't make decisions for themselves or don't have the power to drive the agenda forward. The medium-term budget policy statement indicated that while we have growth in health, you know, despite tough economical and fiscal circumstances, the increase in healthcare spending may offer some opportunities. Health spending has a role to play as a catalyst for inclusive growth, ensuring that South Africans are healthy means that as a nation we will be better placed to participate in the global economy and prosper. The health sector can be a pathway to employment for youth. RAP recommends that the Jobs Fund could consider a funding round that focuses on women's employment within the health sector as one of the sectors featured in the next funding window. And here we're thinking specifically of looking at the professionalization of community health workers, which provides an entry opportunity for young rural women to develop the kind of skills that can develop a path to sustainable employment. Now, why rural proofing? When we think about our country, you know, and we look at the, and unpack those unemployment statistics a little bit further, it's very interesting that rural youth in particular have amongst the highest unemployment rates. It's a situation that's further exacerbated by the fact that there's very low school completion rates. And also young women in rural areas have among the highest incidences of teenage pregnancy, which could be a direct result of poor access to sexual and reproductive health services. But when we talk about the rural proofing, I think rural proofing is looking at these budget proposals with the lens of thinking of what is the impact on those rural communities. How does the policy respond to the developmental needs of people living in rural areas and former homelands? And how can we, as a society, better account for...
Can I suggest something? I don't think anybody disagrees with you. We're all empathetic, right? The thing is, can you also advise other submitters? Can you suggest to us how we should juggle the budget around? Can you suggest to us how we can save money? Can you suggest to us how we can give you, from the budget, more money? So can you move to your...
With respect, I think at the end of the day, there's a prevailing narrative in society at the moment that there's only one particular way to drive our country forward. And I think at the end of the day, the point that we're trying to make in bringing these things to the new members, and particularly to us as a society, is that austerity isn't the only particular way that we can drive our country forward. The second thing that we'd like to say is that, you know, often these are missing people or voiceless people that ultimately our political organization doesn't allow for us to create platforms. And I think sometimes budgets are the only statements of intent that allow society to have some kind of input into how or the kind of society that we want to create. Now, we believe at the end of the day that through expansive social investment, right, we can actually drive our country forward. When we look at the reforms within the health system, when we're talking about the NHI, it's not really just about robbing people of their medical aid. It's really looking at how we're spending that 240 billion rand that we allocate to health each year in a manner that is socially distributive, not just in the way that it advances healthcare, but also in terms of the economic impetuses that it can bring to communities that otherwise fall outside of the general debates around local economic development. When we look at the revamp of a hospital like the Bambusana Hospital in rural Transkei or former Transkei in the Eastern Cape, we're spending over 800 million in reforming that hospital or refurbishing that hospital. But what's not in the public domain is the extent to which we've looked at those proposals as how they can drive forward the skills of the community in which the hospital is housed, where we can have greater local economic development opportunities that's not just focused on politically connected people, but rather in driving the entire community forward. It normally takes between 2 to 5 years to complete those projects. That's more than enough time to be able to train a new cadre of
obstetricians.
I'm at 10 minutes, but I've spent 5 minutes.
No, I gave you the extra time. I think this is not really productive
in terms of engaging with the process. And I understand your need for brevity and for directness.
No, it's not about brevity. It's about focusing on recommendations on the budget.
Look, this is not a budget, like Tito told all of you when you were here now the other day. This was a policy statement, and we failed drastically on the proposals we made earlier. With respect. Right, so what we're saying, as we move into February, there's a need for a rethink. There's no shortcuts here. There's no way to say that do this, save this. That doesn't get us anywhere. No, I think our proposal is that we want a social stimulus. We want a rethink on this idea that just cutting budgets and cutting staff counts.
But what are you proposing for the budget? That's what we're asking. That's what we need help
on. I think this, look, at the end of the day, in 2 minutes, you're not going to get enough. Read our proposals. There's a number of the...
Why don't you focus on your recommendations?
Why am I spending most of my time arguing with you, Chair? With respect.
You didn't give it the chance.
No, the problem statement is not adequately addressed in the vision. I think that's part of the problem. I think nobody has a monopoly on knowledge, to be fair.
Okay, you can say what you
don't
like.
Spend more time on the problem statement. Spend more time on what is it that government can do for a special parliament. That's what we want.
No, it's to be fair. What happens is too many people make submissions that have no value to the
Well, you're deciding for everybody what's of value and what's not of value.
Look, with your respect,
no, with
have
due respect,
your respect,
I think, Comrade Chair, I'd like to just say with respect that I don't think that your current engagement with the public process lends any help that you would take any of these recommendations forward.
In 2 minutes and say what you want to say.
I think what we're saying is we need to align this budget process to look after those people that are most in need, that fall outside the current developmental net. If we're going to be cutting budgets, let's cut them in a manner that prioritizes spending that advances the broader social good, particularly advancing the role of women and rural youth so that we can bring them into inclusion as we move into the next phase of our development. But thank you very much for your time, Rob.
To focus on the last few slides, we'll deal with the recommendations. Now, can we plead with people? You can say whatever you like. This is your parliament. But we can't make use. No, we cannot make use of what you are saying unless you tell us what you think the minister should put in the budget. We want to hear from you. You're the experts in the area. So what I suggest is, can the researchers focus on the last few slides? Thank you. And can the members focus on that? That is the law. That's what the Money Bill Act says. We can change the law, my brother. Send us proposal. But that's what the law says. Can we abide by the law we pass? We want you to spend maybe half the time on dealing with the problem statement, half the time on what government must do via parliament. Thank you. Right, that's the law, whether you like it or not. You can agitate to change it. Next is Women, African Alliance and International Rivers. Are you here? Where are you? So you're not here. Okay, next is... Oh, where are they? Can they put their hand up? Yeah, you want to speak from there? That's fine. Okay, thank you.
Thank you,
you can use this the way you want, but it will be of no value if you don't add what your recommendations are. Thank you.
Great. Thank you so much, Chair. Good morning to the Chair and the committee, and thank you for the opportunity to present. You'll be happy to note that I do have suggestions on how we can save this money in the budget. My name is Trusha Reddy. I work in the Climate and Energy Program at Woman African Alliance. I am here today representing Woman and International Rivers, who are both civil society organizations based in Gauteng. I don't have a presentation, and I'll just be speaking to my submission. I address you, Chair and Committee, in the spirit of Mr. Tito Mboweni's call for us to all work together to rein in public spending because of the dire state of our economy and our debt levels. The submission concerns specifically the financing of the Grand Inga Dam project and its associated transmission lines by the Department of Energy and ESCOM, and it deals with revenue and the revised fiscal framework. Firstly, to say, it isn't clear from the Department of Energy's budget how much is budgeted specifically for the Grand Inga Dam project, but we do know four things. One is, there's a treaty and an MOU that has been signed between the DRC and South Africa committing South Africa to buy 2,500 megawatts of electricity from the DRC. Secondly, we have the Integrated Resource Plan 2019, which allocates 2,500 megawatts of electricity from the Grand Inga Dam project. Third, the budget for energy makes provision for 50 visits with African states regarding hydropower. And fourth, the then Minister of Energy, Jeff Khadebe, had sent a letter of commitment to the DRC at the end of last year, committing us to buying double the amount of electricity that we initially committed at 5,000 megawatts. So we assume that significant funds will be allocated to this project from this budget. Why are we concerned? This is not a least cost option. Secondly, the project has not been appraised by South Africa through an independent, transparent, and participatory process. The legal and financial risks have not been assessed, yet we are committing significant funds to this. We think this is a fundamentally wrong approach, and basically we're spending money and we haven't appraised the project. Now, to consider the main risks. There are many, many risks, but I'm just going to focus on a few. If we don't do the proper feasibility, there is a risk that if the project is stopped later, we have wasted a lot of money. We have precedent for this. The Pebble Bed Modular Reactor project cost us $10 billion over 10 years, money we cannot get back. And even when it was terminated, we still had no idea whether it was financially, economically viable, or even if it was safe. Secondly, there's a risk that if it becomes too expensive, case in point, Medupi and Kusile, massive time and cost overruns, still costing us enormous amounts of money, and that could happen here again with the Grand Inga Dam project. A third risk is if we spend significant amounts of money initially, we end up getting locked into the project, and then we can't withdraw. The risk here, obviously, is that you crowd out spending on other cost-effective options. I also want to address you around the issue of Eskom and contingent liabilities. Eskom will purchase the electricity through power purchase agreements, and Eskom, we know, is not yet in a sustainable condition financially. Minister Praveen Gordhan just told us that recently in his statement on the restructuring of Eskom. This poses a contingent liability of Eskom needing further bailouts and appropriations that are not subject to the same parliamentary scrutiny as the budget. We think Parliament has a constitutional duty to ensure that we have transparent and cost-effective budget and appropriations. It cannot do this without information. So Parliament needs to call for an independent appraisal of the risks and feasibility of the project and ensure that there is public participation. Now, the World Bank has pulled out of this project, and it is in its 2016 scorecard report, it made the assessment that the risk of the project failing were high, especially citing politics and governance issues, fiduciary responsibilities, institutional capacity for implementation, and technical design capacities. We must also remind ourselves constantly these days of the lessons from the arms deal. Scopa has drawn out some of the main lessons, one of them being that when we signed the contract, we hadn't fully taken into account all of the costs that the contract implicated on us. Scopa also found that the process was not open and transparent, and particularly not open to the public. And this submission draws its conclusions from those lessons. Our recommendations are thus as follows. Number one, the committee must find out what part of its budget the Department of Energy intends to spend on the Grand Inga Dam project. Number two, the committee can and should recommend that the Treasury Budget Facility for Infrastructure conducts a project appraisal and rigorously assesses the feasibility, risks, and proposed financing arrangements. Thirdly, Parliament must recommend that the Department of Energy becomes more transparent and provides the public with more information. Fourth, and importantly, no funds should be approved at all for the Grand Inga Dam project until Eskom has demonstrated that it is a financially sustainable state-owned enterprise, as quoted again directly from Minister Praveen Gordhan in his recent statement. This project involves an ultimate investment on an unprecedented scale and where we are starting from a very financially precarious base. We need to exercise caution and properly assess the risks and feasibility before putting any funding into this project. We really cannot risk wasting any more money on things we know are not feasible. We also know that it's not the least cost option. So in finishing, let me emphasize the following. By far the biggest adjustment in the adjustment budgets this year has been the 26 billion rand for Eskom to service its debt obligations. We are concerned that state-owned entities, Eskom in particular, will obtain special bailouts or appropriations which are having an impact on how the budget gets balanced. At such a critical time, we really can agree that the current administration has committed South Africa's scarce resources and time to a burdensome treaty and a very costly project that will not even come online by the year 2030 at the very best. Thank you.
Budget Justice Coalition, where are you? You're here. You're ready? Okay, can we go ahead? And then after that is Peter Malford, Pensioners Forum. We've got a translator for that. Thank you.
Okay, Chair, thank you. Do you have a copy of our presentation? No, not the presentation. Okay. It was emailed this morning. Okay. We didn't get it. But they were all sent to us that were received on time.
Right.
Okay, no problem.
Okay.
Over to you. You've got 10 minutes. Thank you. Thank you, Chair. Okay, so there's a submission by the Budget Justice Coalition. It's comprised of inputs from around 20 organizations working in different sectors, from economic justice to healthcare to education, organizations around the country. Our submission has three themes. The first is that the fiscal framework and macroeconomic policy proposals contained in the budget resemble those of austerity policies. We explain in our submission how austerity policies have failed internationally to bring about benefits either in terms of economic growth or in reducing the deficit or debt. But we also provide proposals and alternatives and ideas and suggestions for how an alternative approach to austerity may be taken. But we also frame our analysis and our proposals on this budget from a feminist and intersectional perspective. So we have analysed the fiscal framework. We show in our submission that in the previous administration, revenue often exceeded the expenditure ceiling. The expenditure ceiling referring to non-interest payments minus financial bailouts for state-owned companies. And we therefore argue that there's additional room in the fiscus for avoiding cuts to social expenditure. We show that from 2014-15, when expenditure ceilings were reduced significantly by tens of billions of rand each year, this has had a negative impact on demand in the economy, on public investment, on gross fixed capital formation, and this is hampering our economic recovery. And as a result, it's also hampering our efforts to reduce the debt-to-GDP ratio, because GDP, unfortunately, is not growing. And has been way below even population growth now for the last 5 years. The MCBPS proposes expenditure of an increase in the expenditure ceiling of 1.6% in real terms this year, where that's below revenue growth, projected revenue growth. And if we look at the medium-term proposals, we get a rough averaging out of expenditure ceiling growth and revenue growth. So this is the primary sort of budget balance that Treasury is trying to meet. But at the same time, GDP growth only picks up slightly and only just about catches up with population growth. And so our argument is this is essentially maintaining fiscal consolidation and austerity. This is resulting in budget pressures on departments which are very, very severe, and we detail those in relation to a number of departments, including health and education, where we show that per learner spending has decreased on education, and the schools that were expecting infrastructure upgrades are having those deferred and delayed, which is against norms and standards for school infrastructure, and that hundreds of millions of rand are being taken out also of health infrastructure budgets, and this is causing huge issues in terms of staff and equipment shortages in healthcare. We look at other departments as well in our submission. Let me hand over to Bussy, who's also been looking at the international experience of austerity and what lessons we might learn from that in South Africa.
So international evidence has shown that austerity is not economically viable, and austerity has helped to displace the harm caused by economic and political crisis onto the general public through bailouts, as we've seen in South Africa, through bailouts to Eskom. Austerity policies have dismantled the mechanisms that reduce inequality and enable equitable growth. Abundant international evidence shows how austerity leads to rising unemployment, falling incomes, and increased inequality, which is the case in South Africa. So this certainly cannot work for us. What we also know about austerity is that women in particular are affected more. Evidence has shown that austerity exacerbates existing structural inequalities, and as we know, there are already structural inequalities for women in South Africa. And also, there are non-neutral tax effects, so the tax burden for women is particularly higher than for men, especially for single-headed households. Women carry the burden of family and social provisioning, and this is exacerbated by austerity because there are cuts to the social services which they rely upon. So we are particularly concerned about the effects that the budget cuts that we are undertaking are going to have on women, children, and non-gender binary people. So as the Budget Justice Coalition, we've decided to take a feminist fiscal policy stance. Gender-responsive budgeting has a long history in South Africa, and South Africa was the second country in the world to introduce gender-responsive budgeting, but we have regressed on this promise to women and children in this country, and therefore we call on this committee to really question these gender budget cuts, especially in the absence of a human rights impact assessment. Oh, and also evidence has shown that there's disproportional effects of austerity on different groups, so we really need to assess how austerity is going to impact different groups within the South African context, particularly where there's such high inequality and poverty, particularly for black women.
Thank you, Chair. So we're calling for a feminist understanding of the budget. We're calling for more disaggregated data to be presented on the budget. One of our recommendations is actually the implementation of a requirement that the UN Committee on Economic and Social and Cultural Rights made to the government in 2018, which was to look at our fiscal framework in terms of its impact on different groups. You can call that a human rights impact assessment, if you like. That is actually something the Treasury committed to doing in 2018. It's also committed to doing that in relation to the VAT increase. But we haven't seen those yet. We'd like to see those in the next financial year. And our recommendations are that the expenditure ceiling cuts should not be implemented. We think they'll have perverse impacts, as we've said, on women, on inequality, but also on the aggregate demand in the economy, which will actually not be good for reducing our public debt. Where there are efficiency savings that can be made, those must be made. But any further reductions in spending have to be in accordance with the Constitution, which requires non-retrogression in access to socioeconomic rights and the achievement of substantive equality. And that's through the use of the maximum available resources on these rights. So we think there's room for additional taxation measures on those who can afford to pay, and that that is a much fairer and more sustainable way out of our economic crises. And that the reforms to the state-owned entities must start to deliver results, which do not require so much taking from the fiscus. Dealing with the inefficient and wasteful expenditure, capacitating departments to improve their financial management capacity is equally important. But we also think the Treasury is not being useful when it is saying that it's not even going to consider prescribed assets. For example, we think that could be a sustainable policy option. And also looking at the surpluses each year, which are accumulating by tens of billions of rands in the government employees pension fund and the unemployment insurance fund, we shouldn't be drawing up these surpluses in one part of the budget and then taking from social spending in other parts of the budget. And finally, we put in some proposals for starting a conversation around what a social stimulus package would look like for South Africa to boost the economy, but also to protect frontline services during these difficult economic times.
And just the last comments about the economic strategy. We do not believe that the current economic strategy as it stands will be able to have the growth that we really need to get out of this. In a Treasury comment, they said that growth alone will not get us out of this. But as we all know here, debt is a function of GDP. And therefore, if you increase your GDP, then the ratio of debt will obviously decline. So we really need to rethink our macroeconomic policy, which has really failed to deliver on the promises that we have made since 1994.
You're done. You've got a minute and a half. You don't want to use it. Okay, fine.
Take questions, perhaps.
Okay, good. Yeah. Now we've got translation services. Where's the translator? Right, you're going to translate. Oh, you're going to translate. Okay. We have the Peter Maritzburg Pensioners Forum. Dave Brunson and Ducey Peter Maritzburg. The representatives speak normally in Eastern Sudan. And you get a simultaneous translation or a summary at the end, right? But there is a submission, which is what will appear in the report. Especially your recommendations is what we mainly focus on. Okay, over to you, Mark. Because it's translation, we give more time, obviously, but the person who tries to stick to
give about 7 or 8 minutes and the translation for the audience. Thank you.
Yandikele Palamende, Ngutobo, Ngubane, Kampumuze, Paiphini. Sinesicelo sesibe naso iminyaka eminingi sogogo sokucela ukuthi sifakelwe imali. Sabhala sacela ukuthi sicela kube uDisemba. Basikhoretha lapha ePhalamende badathi ngasho ukuthi ibhonasi. Lokho-ke sisacela sona leso sicelo sethu njengoba sithola 1.78 uma nathi ngoDisemba sinezidingo basifakele kube yi-spelling check.
I greet you all here in Parliament. I am Togo Ngubane Kampumuza. I'm representing Pietermaritzburg Pensioners Forum. We came here in Parliament earlier on to make a request that Parliament should consider increasing our pension. But now we were corrected that it should be at least, if we can call it, not call it a bonus, but at least if it could be a certain check.
uMzantsi Afrika siyasazi isimo somnotho ukuthi asisihle kodwa kuwona le simo esimnotho esingesihle kuyeshiswa iy'kole udistroye amaklinikhi udistroye ama-library udistroye imela aziyeke ukuthi ngoba umnotho wehlile uyazama uhulumeni ukuthi ayireplace lo ndawo.
Thank you. We were asked as to where do we expect for the government to get money from. But now what surprises us is that we see people destroying clinics, destroying schools, destroying trains and railways. But on top of that, those services are being replaced. We therefore expect that if we could be assisted also and not just be left out, having been told that the government does not have money, would appreciate even if the status of the economy of the country is not good to be assisted as well.
Sorry, Chair. Chairperson. Chair, this side. Just to assist, there are two mics. For the interpreter, you can use the other mic.
Uhulumeni wethu kuyona le mali engekho ngike ngamangala ngilalela ukhozi ekuseni bexoxa abasakazi ontshathi ukuthi siyazi ukunabafwethu laba abaqhama kula mazwe abo womakhelwane ukuthi ukuthuthwa kwabo nje kusukela 2017 asengikhohlwa ukuthi amabhiliyoni amangala kodwa uyawakhipha uhulumeni babuye futhi bezela thina singabakhokhi bendlela yala.
Yeah, what surprises me is that we see sometimes our black brothers from foreign countries who come to South Africa, but only to find that sometimes the government assists them by taking them back, they even come back. Now, the problem is one with us. We are taxpayers, but on top of that, our cries falls on deaf ears.
Nathi sakhala ukuthi siyayikhokha intela ngoba njengoba singogogo siyayikhokha inzeta sinazo isitolo esithenga kuso imisebenzi ayikho sisonda izingane sinabantwana sebe-overstate ngeke umlahle uma engasebenzi sonda abantu engabe sebenemizi yabo baney'ngane zabo ngokuthi amathuba omsebenzi awekho so ngoba thina sogogo siyakwazi ukupatanisa kunokumnani. Why uhulumeni wethu angasizweni asidestroye asendibutho siyacela ngokwesine sizala sine ngoFebruary 1.
We are pleading with you to take our concern into consideration. We are also supporting our families. Some of our children are even above the age of 30. They are unemployed. But as pensioners, we make ends meet by trying to feed these grandchildren that we are feeding. We therefore request you to assist us. This is the fourth time for us coming here to plead with you.
Ikhona bangayikhokhi intela. So uhulumeni naye engabhekisisakade ahambe bakhokhe lezo ntela akwazi ukuthi nathi asikhumbule.
If I'm not mistaken, there are companies here in South Africa, big companies who are not paying tax. But we as pensioners, we pay tax. We therefore request you to assist us. Please don't forget that we are also pensioners. Take our consideration as well.
Uhulumeni wethu ende emnyama owazi ukuthi umuntu omnyama uhlupheka kanjani. Asipheki thina njengezinye izizwe, sipheke ibhodi eligcwale. Ngo-1700 singenzani bazalwane?
The last time we came here, it was February, we were asked as to whether are we going to come back. We then promised that definitely we will come back because this is our country. We are hopeful that this government is a democratic government and this government must listen to us. We hope and believe that this democracy is going to assist all of us. We are also concerned about the amount of money that we are getting, which is about 1.7. Now, if you look at that money, it is not enough because when we cook, you know, we only use one pot for every member of the family. Therefore, the amount that we are getting is not enough. We therefore plead with you to assist us.
Ukuthi asenze uhulumeni wethu singawiseli phansi kuwona le mali. Nina njengabaphathi benu nibeke uNkulunkulu la, kodwa uma soze sife sikhala ngoba ukunqoba kwenu uNkulunkulu ovumile. Sicabangeleni naye ngeke athokoze ngabantu bakhe abahluphekayo bekubantu abalwaziyo usizo lo muntu omnyama.
We are paying for our services. As I'm seated here, I pay for my electricity bills. I am not owing anyone because I know very well that if I don't pay my services, that will be affecting my government. I therefore believe that you, as the leadership of this country, you were chosen by God. You understand our situation, that we are very poor. So God chose you to assist you. To assist us. Now, if you don't understand the situation of the poorest of the poor, then it will be very difficult for you because you were chosen by God to lead us. Thank you. With the remaining minutes, I will therefore request Noxolo to come and add in terms of explaining as to where are you going to get this money with the remaining minutes.
Thank you, Chair. My name is Nakolim Foto. I'm with the Peter Maritza Pension Forum. We've been helping them popularize and publicize their campaign all over South Africa, and I can tell you that the numbers are growing. If you don't sort this out anytime soon, you're going to have a problem, because these are the most important citizens in this country, in my view, and these are the suggestions I have for you that could assist you in finding the money you need. First of all, in this country, South Africa, 10% of the population owns 90% of the wealth. Start by taxing the wealthy. A wealth tax is long overdue. Secondly, corporate income tax. In this country in 1990, if you check historically, the corporate income tax was between 40 and 50%, but right now it stands at below 30%. Why is that? Also, I want to point to the issue of various taxes that you could be using that are already existing that you could be increasing to make the money from. So, for instance, increase the sugary drink tax from 11% that it is now to at least 20%. That helps you even in gathering revenue for health services, because sugary drinks are the main reasons behind most of the illnesses like type 2 diabetes that people are suffering from. And if you can take money from those that cause the illnesses, then you can help even abogogo, who right now can't afford to get the right type of health care. Increase the tobacco tax from 52% to 70%. I suggest that. Efficiently tax the 89% of companies in this country that are operating in this country, making money from this country, that are not tax compliant. Sort out your issues with us. Get that money. It's our money. Bring it. You can't survive on taxing the poorest of the poor, raising a VAT for the poorest of the poor, but you fail at collecting from those who are rich. Take from the rich, give to the poor. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. You're welcome. Thank you. Firstly, we just draw to your attention, there is a petition with a whole lot of names attached. It's called Tell President Ramaphosa to Give Pensioners a 13th Check. Okay, right. It's question time, and then the co-chair will take over with the fiscal study group. So we've got 30 minutes or so. We're just 5 minutes behind time, not too bad. Over to members, preferably depending on number of speakers, 2 to 3 minutes, depending on how many want to raise questions. And the chairs will abide by that. Right, who's going? Nobody. All right, in that case. Okay, Jordan? Well, you can take 10 minutes if you want, because there's nobody else asking questions. No, you really can, because, you know, oh, there's two. Where's three? Jadu is three. Molitani is four, five, six. Okay, in that case, about 3 minutes. How about that? Okay.
Thank you very much. Because of the time considerations, one has to be very direct. It would be better to discuss these things in greater detail, but I'll just put very direct questions. Firstly, Mr. Parks, I absolutely agree with you. It might be snowing outside, but I totally agree with Kusatu about exorbitant management packages in the public sector. You might know that we've made a proposal for how you could actually save around 168 billion rand in the public sector, only dealing with the 29,000 millionaire managers who are currently employed. And that would protect nurses and teachers and professionals who actually deliver services directly to the public, who should absolutely be protected, and I agree with you there entirely. There is a contradiction in the points that you make around ESCOM. You say that we need cheaper power. Again, that's absolutely right, and the lady from the Peter Maritzburg Forum has spoken about the power bills that she's paying, but you also won't allow for retrenchments at ESCOM. Now, there's a lot of evidence about how ESCOM is overemployed by somewhere in the region of 12,000 to 15,000 people. Now, the fact is, you are asking pensioners, like the lady who has just spoken, to essentially subsidize the jobs of those people at ESCOM through higher power prices, because you won't allow ESCOM to deal with that ballooning in employment over the last 10 years, even though there's been no growth in power production. So I just don't think that that's a defensible position. given the trade-offs. I agree that everyone has to take some pain in sorting out Eskom. You've said that coal suppliers must take pain. You've said that IPP suppliers must take pain. But you are saying that basically Eskom itself and its employees must not. And I don't think that that's correct. Then on the Budget Justice Coalition, I disagreed with a lot of your presentation, but let's just quickly run through a few points. You say that reducing the expenditure ceiling has hurt the economy and that essentially austerity is a bad idea. Of course, no one ever likes to cut public services. It's not something that anyone ever does with relish. But when you have a debt to GDP of above 70% and one of the highest budget deficits in the world now, starting to compete with India, whose economy is growing at 6%, so they can afford a budget deficit of 6%. There is only one option. You have got to get public expenditure under control. And ours is not under control. Now, it's completely wrong, and this is where I suppose I do agree with you, it's completely wrong to make vulnerable women and children and poor South Africans...
I'll give you another spot if we have it.
Okay. Are forced to pay for that. So, for example, in this budget, there is a 50 million rand cut from cervical cancer treatment, a 40 million rand cut for school infrastructure for pit latrines. This is unacceptable. But it's also unacceptable to pass that austerity to private households by simply taxing the very small tax base that we have in South Africa even more. The solution is to cut waste in the public sector. And that is the proposal that we've made. I have other questions, but I'll save them for later.
To my members, on Friday we meet again. Those of you who are coming for the first time, on Friday, National Treasury responds to your issues. When you get a chance to reply to them, then they will reply to you. No other committee does this, okay? Nor is it required by law. This is the only committee that does this. So remember, members, those of you who are new, on Friday you will still engage the same issues. But the committee decides, if you want extra time, then we spill over into 2 o'clock and so on, and that's a decision of the committee. Okay, next is whoever, number two. Who's number two? Yeah, Zolani.
Thank you, Chairperson. I just want to check, is the translation service working here? Okay, no, thank you, Chair. Let me first appreciate the presentation. By the four organizations. But I will focus.
You can only manage issues. We don't have simultaneous translation in Parliament.
No problem. I'll speak to the professor so he speaks.
You can understand.
He will understand me. Mandala Niti, Yabulela Mama, Nale Ndet, Webega, Apa, Inchaganga, Nitunba, Ndet, Henshe, Yakapendovana, Nipumengo, Nina, Uzu, Apa, Namshanjan, Banin. Ndiyarhalelauyazi uba nisukaphi nize kanjani apha nikhwela inqwelo ntaka okanye nihamba ngodulatula okanye nihamba ngololiwe. Okwesibini, kule nto niyithethayo uba nithi nifuna itsheke leshumi elinesithathu xa kuphela unyaka, ingaba yeyona nto enicinga uba yeyona nto iyiyo leyo kunokokubana nenyuse imali yenu inyanga nenyanga ibheke phezulu? Nenzela iholide zikaDisemba xa nenza njalo, okanye nenzela into yobana nikwazi ukuxhaseka ubomi benu ukusuka ekuqaleni konyaka uyomigqibeleni? Ndibuziswa lo mbuzo ukwenzela ubana mhlawumbi uba beningakhange niyicingisise kakuhle le nto, ngoba ingumbono omhle. Nam ndisuka emakhaya, ndiyayiqonda ngqo le nto umama ithethayo. Kodwa ingxaki endinayo into yobana nizayifumana kube kanye lo mbuzo enyakeni, ngakumbi nangakumbi kwezaa ziphakanyiso zibekwa ngusisinoxolo pha axelayo uba le mali izawufumaneka phi kanjani. Ibingaske xa sowuxhwangushile wabeka ngolo hlobo, usose uze nento eqiqisekileyo nevokothekileyo eza kwenza into okokubana yenyuke imali eyamkelwa ngabantu abadala, kuba siyabaqonda uba bangabo abantu abaxhasa kakhulu iintsapho ngeentsapho zaseMzantsi Afrika. Ngumbono omhle lo, njengoba ndisitsho ndiyawuxhasa. Uba nje ungandiphendula kuloo nto, undityebisele, undifundise into yobana nifikelele njani kweso sigqibo njengesona sigqibo isisiso. Enkosi, mhlale ngaphambili. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, next, number three. Who's number three? Okay, then number four.
Thank you, Chair. I just want to, let me start first by appreciating the presentations done. My clarity-seeking questions will go to the pensioners from Pietermaritzburg. I just want to check with them. Are they, if whether they are from Pietermaritzburg, and if really they are from, that means that they have traveled something like 1,555 kilos to come to Cape Town here. Now I want to check the mode of transport that they used to come here, and how, who financed that transport for them to come here to Cape Town, and maybe the cost, because now if I hear it well, their presentation, they said this is the fourth time they visited the parliament. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Five.
Yeah, no, thanks, Honorable Chair. We welcome all the presentations that have been made here. On COSATU, I just want to confirm that you seem to be agreeing with the minister in relation to the issue of the wage bill, because you are saying that in 1994, public servants, they were about roughly 1 million. So to date, public servants, they are 1.1 million. Which means in 25 years, public servants, the number of public servants, they've just increased by perhaps 100,000. Which means in terms of your argument, the public service is not bloated, and however, in terms of population, we are saying in 1994 the population was roughly 35 million and currently is roughly 57 million. Now, however, the argument of the minister, I think he is saying, in terms of the warm bodies, we don't have a challenge, but we've got a challenge in terms of the wage bill, which means in terms of the 25 years, the public service in terms of warm bodies has not increased significantly. However, the wage bill has increased significantly. Now, hence the minister is therefore saying, let's target the high earners. He's saying, let us freeze the remuneration of the high earners. And I think you are saying, let's target the, in terms of your own ways, you are saying the exorbitant management packages. So I just want to confirm that in terms of the, as far as the issue of the wage bill is concerned, I think it seems like, of course, how you are agreeing with the minister, because my understanding is that the minister is not talking about the lower earners and what. He's also talking about the high earners to say, let's freeze the increase of the remuneration of the high earners. Just want to confirm that if you are totally agreeing with the minister in that.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, and my apologies for being late. Chairperson, I have not heard the presentation from COSATU, but I will rely on the presentation that I've gone through. And my focus will also be on the wage bill. You know, all the time when government is frustrated and needs to do the cuts, all the time the target is public service, to cut on the wage bill, to reduce the number of public service. And you ask yourself as to, I think the question that you were supposed to ask to us and the treasurer is, what is the expectation of the receiver, the public, in terms of service delivery? Because we are complaining to say we need qualified, skilled, relevant public servants. And when you get that, those such people, you are going to increase in the number. And when also the frustration in terms of the
the spending from provincial governments and national governments. There's this attitude of freezing of polls, the moratoriums. And there's an outcry in terms of the health workers, the number of health workers, that we need more health workers. There's a demand also that we need to open and reutilize the public colleges that we used to have for education and health. And what are we going to do with those people? Because the expectation is that they need to give service to the people. And such services are personnel driven. We need teachers in classes. We need nurses in hospitals and health centers. So what are you saying? There's a program of Funzalishaga, a program. All these people that are giving bazaar, you are training for them to be teachers, professional teachers. Where are you going to put them? Because you must utilize them as government. What is your plan? But then you're talking about shrinking, slimming. Okay, it's fine. I'm just, you know, as my comrades, to say, look around those issues. Because the public servant is always the target. But there are other things that we are shying away from looking at it, and thanks to Sisno Todd. And you also highlighted it, but I don't see you being firm on them and making and utilizing the muscle and the power that I know you have. The tax world, the gap between the poor and the rich has widened. Instead of shrinking, we could not close the gap. So the wealth tax is something that we need to take it head on. Those who earn more, we must be able to subsidize the poor. And also on what Honorable Kolani has asked, Bokoko, kuzabamnandi ukuthi nithole imali ngoDisemba, ukuthi sibe ne-festive Christmas enhle as a family, because we know ukuthi Christmas is khathi se-family. But event we badala every day from January to December. Check ukuthi, okungcono ukuthi sipushe ukuthi nithole i-increase from January to December or only the settings check. What difference will it make? Empilweni yakho, ngoba labantwana nibondlayo, nibondla for the whole year. Chairperson, I'm going to respect your time, even though I wanted to say, okay, thank you, Chair. I don't know what you said, but thank you. Let me close by saying, Chair, we need to look at, in terms of collection of revenue, the difference between the company tax, income tax, the amount that we collect from the companies, and the personal income tax, we get more from individuals. And if we say we want to reduce, we are saying we are going to reduce revenue, but then we don't get more from tax. We need to look into their proposal, and this talks to what the lady has spoken about, which is not all, tax evasion and other things that was spoken to you, Kosatu. It's very important. We are in this situation and we must come with solutions together. As much as we were united when the Boke won, even today, let's get united, Professor, on this issue of the economy.
Dion, you can time me 3 minutes, right? Give me stuff. Okay, firstly, Kosatu, you're right about many things, but we have to deal with the reality we're in. So maybe you can't speak for this, but on the just transition, have you got any terms you want to set out? But they're going to restructure ESCOM, and you can't sweep the ocean back to the floor. So have you got any proposals in that regard? Secondly, to the proposals on INGA, you almost border on saying no to the project, right? But many things you've said are new. I really think, colleagues, we must take seriously what you are saying. I think in the report, the recommendation should include several of the things you are saying. It should be more open and transparent. You also mobilize the relevant committee. You can come here, but you must go to the relevant portfolio committee, and we will send your submission forward, but you need to mobilize it, right? Okay? But it's the first time somebody's brought this up. Recently, there was a figure in the public domain about the amount that government has given and where is it going, right? So I have been reading and following it, but I think it's very helpful, your recommendations. I think the committee should easily consider putting that in our own recommendations at the end. Then on the issue of the rural health advocacy program, as I told my friend Russell there, we agree largely with the thrust of what he's saying. His point is that the concept Treasury's got, I hope you're going to respond to that on Friday, is wrong. But we should give him maybe a minute or so, because his recommendations at the end are quite good. They're not concrete recommendations. Can we alert you to this? You're not technical experts. You're not required to do it. You need to get our sort of empathy and support, and then we require Treasury to come up with the answers. But you must give us a broad direction. You can help with that, because it's the recommendations ultimately now report that is what Treasury responds to. So I think we should give him a minute or so, 2 minutes, to give us the last three of his very good slides. Then on the issue of the Budget Justice Coalition and the previous submission, it's a sad thing. The gendered budgeting that we led many parliaments of the world has actually had a relapse. I think that's very important, colleague. We need to put that back, given the issues of gender being so prominent in the public domain at the moment. That's a further recommendation I think maybe we should think about and get the staff to write an appropriate recommendation. Whether this is austerity or an austere budget, we can discuss that, right? So austerity has certain implications in the conventional World Bank sense. It's erosion of the welfare state and so on. And we can have a debate about it. But many things that Budget Justice Coalition says, in principle, they're right. Practically, can be implemented. On the Peter Mazur pension, this belongs really, but it's fine, to the, can I plead with the organizers that you must make a submission to the Appropriations Committee. They deal with moving money around. We raised this before, and the staff should abide by the law. Nevertheless, you forward your submission to them. There's the chairperson of the Appropriations Committee there, Comrade Dikeleri Mashlangu, and Sipiso Buteleri. But we will refer it to them. Can we plead with you just to abide by the law? Never mind. We agree morally, my friend. There's nothing, oh, I'm 3 on 5, I'll stop here. Just to say, morally, we agree with you. Everything you said, I agree with personally. Most of us agree with. Practically, how are we going to do it? So think about trade-offs. So can you get some trade-offs and give us a submission in a week's time? You know? So I'm stopping because I'm at 20 seconds over. Right, there we are, stop. Okay, over then to, I've succeeded at the last time. You know what you were? You were 5 minutes, 14 seconds. Don't clap. Okay, next then your credibility is done. Okay, let's start with, in the order you spoke, Kosatu. Each of you has got 3 minutes. Can I plead with people to understand? This is one part of a two-part process. On Friday, can you come back for those of you who can afford it? Others, can you send a Cape Town colleague of yours to the hearing? Friday, we meet again. Thank you. Right.
Thanks, Chair. Thanks to members for the questions. I'll try to be quick and to the point. To Honourable Jordan. Yeah, look, I think we would want to hear some of the proposals from any member, even from the DA. We're quite keen to have engagement with government at the PSABC because we recognize we're in a serious crisis, to put it very politely. We did some research when we saw your initial proposals, and we found that many of those 29,000 are actually medical doctors, but we agree with you in the principle the fat at top must be cut. So any practical ideas will support it. I think, Chair, that's also why we're quite keen to see that the public sector entities and the SOEs with those huge ballooning at the top must fall under the PSCBC. That'll benefit government because you have one engagement, stability, and you can reduce the wage gap within the public service in a progressive way. But I think, Chair, we'd also want to see Treasury come with practical proposals and engage in the PSCBC around the 128,000 vacancies. Let's prioritize the critical services like teachers, nurses, doctors, police, prisons, and cut off the fat that we see in ministerial staff, for example, with ballooning even after the elections. Chair, on the Chief of Power, Honourable Jordan, as well, look, I think there is some positive news around ESCOM. I think the staff complement cut by about 2,000 in the past year because of natural attrition vacancies. But we're quite pleased. We recognize ESCOM is in a life and death struggle. We're pleased when the Honourable Pravin Gordhan and the Minister proposed that excess staff would be taken to municipalities, to electricity departments. Our bottom line is no retrenchments. We have 40% unemployment. We'd rather have an engagement through the bargaining processes about deploying staff from ESCOM to municipalities, or within the public service, to Home Affairs, to SAPS. There's reskilling funds available in the Department of Labour, but it can't add to the unemployment queue. That's the red line. Chair, look, also, they were not just reckless hooligans. So we had a quite detailed engagement around the EdCon issue earlier this year, whereas Labour, we contributed 1.2 billion rand to the UF to save it, but it was based upon a turnaround plan, cutting the bleeding and a tripartite compromise from the banks, from labor, everybody, but we saved 140,000 jobs. And that's, we see the value in that kind of social package. And that's why, Chair, we're willing to have a discussion around the Eskom debt. The PIT can assist, the prescribed assets can be spread, and we can all make a small contribution in a minimal risk way. But then there's a social package, no retrenchments, the redeploying, the reskilling, etc., etc. But it must be conditioned upon dealing with the looting, the beating, arresting those who have looted, because you can't expect workers to contribute. But the looters continue to enjoy life and participate on social media. Chair, on Friday, we might have to make a plan, but the finance minister is coming to NEDLAC on Friday also for the budget engagement, but we can make a plan. So Honourable Morolong, look, I think we were pleased that the minister kind of hinted about cutting at the top, but we want to see practical proposals, because the way government is presenting it every year, it's a general thing. And the general thing, then the nurses and the teachers feel demoralized. They feel the jobs at risk. And those workers are suffering the strain. You have doctors working 48-hour shifts. Nurses, instead of being six nurses to a clinic, it's one nurse.
You have 3 minutes, right, between time.
Chair, I also think we also recognize very last that point, Chair, that part of the reason why the wage bill increased was because we were dealing with closing the parted wage gap that we inherited in 94. I'll catch up very quick, Chair. Honourable Masangu, I think we've covered many of the issues. But I think, Chair, we'd want to really see a discussion about redeployment in the public service. We have huge vacancies in the police, the critical service departments. I think, Chair, one useful intervention would be, from members of society as well, is that we must employ more people in SARS and the customs enforcement, because that will generate additional tariffs, will save local industry, will see better money spent from government. The wealth tax, Honourable Matlangu, we agree. We are hopeful when the minister talks about reviewing tax, it will be in a progressive way. And this wealth tax can be broken down to income tax for the rich, a little bit higher, or wealthy companies, inheritance, estates, land, luxury goods, imports. You can play around with it. Also, Chair, to the Honourable ANC members, to remember that in the ANC manifesto.
Yeah. Remember, you can write to us also
sure,
by Monday morning.
Very last point, Chair, is that to look at free electricity concessions as part of helping the poor, the pensioners, etc. Very quickly, just transition, Chair. Look, we have to have a plan, especially for the coal plants for Mpumalanga. There is options there from funding available in government, looking at building solar panel factories in Mpumalanga, reskilling people. We have had some engagements with Barbara Creek, with the Minister for Environmental Affairs, about a pilot project which will target coal mine workers in Mpumalanga, just to break it as simple, feelable, give hope to people, Chair. Thank you.
Mr.
Ezra?
Thank you, Mr. Kassim. Karim? Firstly, look, I think most of our proposals are normally supported to the Appropriations Committee because it has to do with the way that the budget is distributed. I think the reason why we're at the Finance Committee this year is the overwhelming narrative that this is one-size-fits-all to cutting government expenditure. And I think what we're saying is we're particularly concerning that a lot of the proposals that are out there, if not correctly and well-coordinated, can have a negative impact on the people that are most in need of care and support. We reminded from 2015 when we published the report around the cutting of the freezing of posts that was happening within provincial departments as a means to manage budgets, and I think nobody needs to be reminded about the Gauteng Marathon Mental Health Project and how that ended. Without clear guidelines, these kind of budget cuts tend to cut the levels of service that the poor most depend on. We also particularly concerned around what the impact is on a narrowing of state expenditure on the rural economies, and the rural health system in particular. It's very different implementation context from those sitting in cities, and a lot of the additional costs attracted to often looking after the most vulnerable people within our communities are not fully accounted for in a budget cycle. We're also very encouraged with this idea of the Kaulesa approach to district coordination, and we feel it can be an opportunity to strengthen fiscal management or development management within rural context, but we need more details. There's been a fair amount of roadshows around it, and there may be budgetary and allocative aspects to it, but yet there's no detail. And lastly, I think there is an opportunity when we can't expect to achieve a different result by doing the same thing. And I think one of the things that we need to look at is the way that government spends. You know, I think there's an opportunity for that $850 billion or so that government spends in goods and services that can be much more redistributive than what it currently is. And we feel as we prepare for the NHI, rural districts should be prioritized. And by going through the infrastructure needs and maintenance requirements of the various rural hospitals and clinics,
we may be presented with an opportunity to create employment opportunities for rural youth, stimulate rural business, and ensure that we can create development opportunities for rural people where they are and avoid them from coming into the cities where they join the urban poor and become particularly vulnerable. And I think this is the particular case for rural. So while our proposals are not concrete and say increase the wealth tax, ours is more about alignment. Because if we don't talk about that 80% of the population that fall outside of the five big metros or so, we're not going to have the kind of inclusive society that we strive for as South Africans. And the cost of austerity will always sit with the poor more. And I think the evidence is clear on that. So thank you for the opportunity for us to reassert that. And I think we will make more detailed submissions around budget allocations in the Appropriations Committee. But I think the point for us was really to say that there isn't a single story that can take us out of the current challenges that we face. Thank you.
Yeah, that comes across much clearer now. Thank you. Just to say, look, man, can I just say this as a chair now? I'm not making a contribution. We meant to facilitate. I think the majority of us here, all the submissions that have come in some or other way, morally and in terms of values, we have no disagreements, actually. I can't see that the ANC can disagree with many things, broadly speaking. It's about the concrete reality of where we are and the concrete trade-offs that we need help on. Never before have we needed help as this parliament and this government as we do now. Civil society has to help. So I'm pleading with people that you've got a bit of time, even if it's just bullet points, and the researchers are obliged, if it comes to recommendations, to slide them in. Okay? And then we will decide what we include and what we exclude. But all these, now a lot of recommendations have also come up. Can I plead with the researchers when you do a draft for the chairs to look at, and then for the committee, include all these recommendations. But we need your help, and I would suggest, look, to be realistic, if you can send more recommendations, just in bullet points, it's fine. By noon on Friday, it'll help us. Thank you very much. So who's next?
Thanks, Chair. I also just want to thank you for the what I consider to be really positive feedback on our submission and the presentation here today. I just want to clarify, when you say that it borders on being against the Grand Inga Dam project, I really think our emphasis is not on that, but on procedure and process, really, and about conducting the right feasibility studies and risk assessments before we go into this project and start plowing in money. So that's really what I wanted to say.
The chair of the appropriations is here, and the appropriations committee is here. They'll have to apply their minds to that. But you're right, it's the first time it's been raised, colleagues. It's a bit embarrassing. It's a bit embarrassing that we as Parliament and the committee relevant here has not raised this issue. So that's very, very helpful to us. In fact, a thousand times it's been in the media, not one of us has raised the thing. What are we doing? And are we holding our own government to account? But the Inga project, I think we will all agree, hopefully, that is absolutely necessary given our crisis at the moment. Okay? Okay, thank you very much for that. And then we've got the pensioners.
I'm going to respond because I think over the past four times Amokoko have come here, the problem has been language more than anything. So people are not getting their points because of language. Me, who was raised on my government social grant, got this English, will do it for you guys. So Amokala, what the Gogos have been saying every other time they've been here, and it's quite embarrassing that members of this House have not familiarized themselves with the previous submissions of Okogo that we sent. There was a zip folder that had all the information until now. So had you read that, maybe you'd have an idea of what they want. But anyways, I'll tell you. So what the Gogos want exactly is for their grant to be increased, to be much closer to a living wage, right? The national minimum wage, we are benchmarking by that, and they're thinking around 2,500, because how this grant works in households is that it works as a wage. It supports families and such, so it should be close enough to the national minimum wage if we are to recognize the burden that Amokoko carries. So that's one, what we want. But every other time we come to Parliament, we've written letters to the President, to Treasury, to everyone, with quite deep suggestions about what thought through suggestions about how and what needs to be done, which you could have gone through that you didn't. But anyways, if you go through all those documents, you'll find all these suggestions. So that's one. Bring it closer to the national minimum wage. At least make it 2.5. Secondly,
the December bonus is to deal with this vacuum that is December, January. You know, kids need things for Christmas, first of all, and also we move on from that, we go straight into schools opening. And so that's the idea of the bonus. And it's also, I could say, something that could be done in the meantime. In the meantime, you are thinking about raising the social grant to a living wage status. How about you give abogogo a bonus so they can survive the coming December? So that's the idea around the 13th check. I hope it's very clear. This question is about who's funding abogogo to be here. The very first time abogogo came here, they traveled by bus from Pietermaritzburg to Cape Town. We were very saddened by that. It's not something that's nice for all people to be traveling in that manner to get here, to get to be listened to. So, who was asking who's funding us, I want you to please also tell us who's funding you. Political party funding bill. Speak to that. Secondly, if you want to know who's funding abogogo to be here, you can go to the amanda.mobi website. We have all our funders listed there. You'll find them. When we saw abogogo, we're going through this of having doing the back and forth, we raised funds for them, and they are now able to come here. Also, if you want to help, since you want to know so much about who's funding them, can you help them by funding them until Friday to stay here so that they can come back and respond to the rest of the process? What else was the question? So, yeah, I think I've responded to all the questions, in fact.
Can I respond to this as the former chair of this committee? Right? Because what is being said here, you have a very strong moral case. And we said to you before, and we've repeatedly said it, we have no difficulty with what you're saying. We agree with everything you're saying, the majority of us. But it's the trade-off that really matters. So I hope you are translating, okay? So let's deal with the facts. So Lalin Kiva is a new member. If you go to the parliament in Germany and Switzerland, with the resources they have there, it's possible that he will read 5 years of the previous era's submission. So I think that's an unfair question to put to him. You should put it to me, Tikelezi, where's Nicola? She's not even here. The only two members that are here from the previous era, oh, and Dion to some extent, right? Can I finish a point of order? You can have a point of order, but then let's be fair to Zolani. Insofar as it affects new members, you know, you can tell me that I'm an idiot anytime. I don't care. You can say I'm a fool. I shouldn't be said. That's fine. But let's deal with the facts. Now, let's be fair to Zolani. He's a new member. The question should be directed to me. What have we done? Well, firstly, we agreed to you, but we answered all your questions. You mobilized the media. And so on. We referred your submission to the relevant committee, to Pinky Porter, who dealt with the matter. Secondly, we have, in our recommendations, said, in writing, which we sent you copies of, the committee secretary said, we agree with you. And we plead with them not to allow the your suggestion that it should be a national minimum wage. I want the ANC study group to think about this. That's fair. We agree with you. The problem is finding the trade-off. It's national health insurance. Okay? It's transfer of land to the very same constituency you're talking about. National health insurance will benefit the very same constituency you're talking about. The government's progressive pro-poor programs. We have said that VAT must be reviewed. They'll have to reply on Friday. Good question by BJC. What have they done? Where's the impact study? We want to know how far you've gone with that. All of these things are trade-offs. Even if you became president of this country tomorrow morning, my friend, and Ugogo here became deputy president, you'll deal with the same issues. In other words, when we're talking of the poor are not just the pensioners. The poor are the pensioners and others. You've got full sympathy from, I think, across political parties. I doubt even the DA would venture into this area. On the matter of I don't want to say this, but I'll speak off record, right? Who paid for that? The first time you came here, Parliament has a rule. There is so much of corruption. You can't come here now at whatever time it is, 20 to 12, and say, can you do it? It has to go through 6 signatures. We can't do that, and you know that. We have approached Parliament to fund you, but we cannot fund so many people as strong as your cause is. Can we get these things clear? It'll be 2 to 3 people maximum. that we can fund for a flight. And we must make an application on time, and the committee will process it. There is an in-principle agreement to do that. On the matter of lunch last year, Parliament didn't pay for it. That's all I will say. You came, and we decided to give it. So let us also be fair. We're on your side. But this is your Parliament. You don't want to abuse your own Parliament. It'll be corruption if I can suddenly, as a chairperson, sign off and say, you can come. But if you make a motivation, please, can you ministers, they must make a motivation at least 3 weeks before the budget, ask for 3 or 4 people, we will arrange the funding. If the funding is refused, you must go to the Speaker and the House Chair. So let us think about that. About 10 over, I can tell you now, where's the committee secretary? In Kulilekwa, are you here?
I'm here, Chair.
Can you do this by today? And can you negotiate outside the state? But you will have to restrict your... Is the committee in agreement that up to 3 people we will fund for a flight and for a stay? Is there anybody who disagrees with that? Provided we get the motivation 3 weeks beforehand. Can we move on, please? Okay. Because this parliament wants people like yourselves to be here. Not the elites from Kosatu, even as you respect. Not the elites from Busa and the tobacco industry. This is your parliament. And you must defend this parliament against abuse. It's your needs that must be met, and therefore we can't do what you say. Not a good thing. We can't. Parliament doesn't allow it. And correctly so. We can talk outside the meeting with Nkululeko and Frank. Yes, and.
Thank you very much, Chair. Very short. Chair, I would, I think, to be specific to the presenters and to be specific to the presenters presenting Okoko, to put them at ease. We are here, we are present, we accept, and we will consider. So we don't want them to feel as if that they are doing it over and over. Here they are coming for the fourth time, but we are here, I'm 5 months here. So it's the first time I'm hearing this presentation. So we must look in terms of those considerations as to how do we take the matter forward. So just to advise also, I think for cost saving, for Okoko not to come maybe as a group, as we have got your information, maybe to set delegates in future. Thank you.
Zolani, to be fair to him, can I say one last thing? Zolani, to be fair, raises the issue of rural areas consistently. He even forgets there's an urban poverty in this country, right? So you've got a friend in him, really, my sister. Okay, but we're not having a debate. I'm giving you information. Yeah.
I just want to correct that because the documents were emailed even with this submission, I was hoping that by the time we come here, members of this House would have gone through those documents or had a bit of time to see them. I did not say that people should do work of the past 5 years and find out what's been going on. That's not what I said. We sent documents and we hope people would see them by now.
Sorry, Chair. I just want to say to her that... win people over and don't try to ostracize people who are on your side. We are with you. The language you employ is really casting aspersion on us. But I understand, maybe it's a frustration, but going forward, don't do that. We have just arrived here and we are a new administration, and the things that we are saying, they appeal to us. And we will try to do everything we can to come closer in order for us to achieve the very objective. Your objective is our objective. We represent the aspirations of the very same people that you represent. We would love to see what you are demanding happens, and we will use every power that we have from where we sit to ensure that it is at least realized. So please, in future, you don't have to cut fingers when you address us here. Speak in a manner that is respectful. Speak in a manner that represents the people you represent, the elders. And we are really sympathetic to your cause. And your cause indeed is our cause. We are here, as the chairperson says, I am the leader of the traditional leaders in this country who head the administration of people in rural areas. And what has brought me up here is the struggles of the grassroots people in the rural areas. So we are in the same wavelength. So please, speak to us with respect, and we want to see that happen. Indeed, I really like what you represent, and we'll ensure that we articulate it within the corridors of power and ensure that it happens. Thank you very much, Chair.
Well, we'll seek to ensure that it happens. It's going to take a long haul. But they're not, you know what we'll do? Come again and again and again. Secondly, to be fair to members so that everybody understands them. The submissions come all at the last minute. There's nothing we can do because of the Money Bills Act and because Parliament has to arrive on the 6th of December. So normally the chairs, I actually, as a chair, co-chair, my chair will be here in a moment. He's gone to some other commitment, but that doesn't mean this is not important. What I'm saying is, we read over the weekend, when we draft the report, all the researchers here, that's their job, plus the chairs in particular, and maybe I know Mr. David Maynard is doing a lot of it, and he's got a staff, you've got a staff there, but you've got researchers and so on. I think they're sitting here somewhere, they used to, I don't know. Don't think this is the be-all and end-all. We have to work it through. So my sister, we're on the same page, I think we've covered the ground. We must not ever have any illusion about that. How we do it, it's not going to happen overnight. If you want that, then let's have a socialist society. I'm from the Communist Party. You want to sign up membership? Come and join us. Okay? EFF, well, they'll tell you they're going to increase their welfare, but they won't be able to do it, right? We're a realistic, practical, Mr. Jordan Hill Lewis here, won't you agree? Realistic, practical, balance of forces, balancing trade-offs, Communist Party, a real Marxist party. But you and I will engage in another debate, hopefully in the year 2050. Okay, who's next? The chair will take over when he comes in. Fiscal Cliff Study Group. Professor, yes, BJ.
Oh, you want to be here. Sorry about that.
Okay, so I hope you guys will find my comments sufficiently respectful. And I want to start with the comments about expenditure. I think the real problem here is, why have we decided that our what are the merits at which we've concluded that our expenditure is too much? And why aren't we considering other innovative approaches to raising revenue and being able to sustain that? Is our expenditure catering to the needs of Abogogo? Clearly, we've already established that it's not, right? So how can we say our expenditure is too much? And so I think we really need to consider what are the principles in which we are cutting budgets. What's making us decide that cutting the cervical cancer program is what will help us to grow. And also, as I've already established, depressing aggregate demand will not get the wheels of this economy growing. So actually cutting expenditure in the long run is not going to help us, right? In the short, there's a page in the MTBPS where they say that it's actually it's a short run, you know, like cuts that will lead to long-term benefits. But the cost of austerity is really human lives, just like we've already established, right? So in Greece, when they cut expenditure on an HIV program, it led to an increase in the number of new HIV infections. Is that the kind of society that we want? We say we cut now, but then in the long run, it'll be okay. How do we weigh those costs, those trade-offs to human lives now? And I don't think we suggested that there should be increased taxes on households. We already know that the tax base is small. We're really looking at what are the innovative ways of raising revenue. What about the digital economy? What about Airbnb, Uber? How can we think innovatively about how to raise revenue without necessarily burdening the households that you've already mentioned? And I do think that, you know, and the real question is, why have we chosen this path? We know with Greece and Europe that it was imposed on them by the IMF. We know that in other places it was the structural adjustment program through the World Bank. But in South Africa specifically, why have we particularly chosen this path?
Thank you. Just a final point about practical proposals around raising revenue rather than cutting expenditure. The point about the tax base, my reply is that even during our recession, the tax base has been growing year on year. The actual number of taxpayers is growing. And if you look at moral questions, which you say that we are settled on, Chair, around should we cut expenditure on schools, on the human papilloma program, you know, things which people who rely on public services need the most, or should we raise taxes on those who are earning above R1 million a year, including the 29,000 civil servants. We think that we should look at raising taxes, and we give you proposals around different kinds of those taxes, and The reason for that is because not only will that help you to reduce the deficit, but it will also stick to our vision and values of reducing inequality. And that is something which is very silent when Treasury talks about reducing debt. It doesn't talk about how it can do it in a sustainable way, which also contributes to our broader development goals. So that's what we would like to see.
Thank you. Yet again, morally, many of us might agree. Most of us, I think, will. But there are trade-offs that we look at, and the Appropriations Committee will look at that we have to have. John, you want to say something quickly?
Yep. Chair, just to say, again, all of us agree, it is completely unethical to cut the treatment for cervical cancer and infrastructure budgets for pit latrines at schools, for example, while at the same time keeping SAA going. That's exactly the kind of trade-offs that the chairperson has been speaking. Every budget involves trade-offs. The point is, what are the trade-offs that you as a society choose to make? So I agree that it's unethical to make those trade-offs. But at the same time, it might be possible to raise a little bit of extra revenue, and of course we must investigate all of those, all of the ways of doing that. But let's just not forget the facts. Again, the chair has referred to debating on the basis of facts. We are currently spending 300 billion rand a year just on paying the credit card, the national credit card. Now what happens is, even if you raise 15 or 20 billion more in revenue each year, it doesn't even touch sides. When you have an interest charges bill of 300 billion rand a year, we're paying more on interest. We're paying triple than we spend on policing, for example. More now than even on healthcare and education. Now, the more that you spend on debt, the more that interest charge becomes every year, and the more you squeeze out the basic services like cervical cancer treatment and schools and doctors and so on that the poor desperately rely on. So that is the fundamental trade-off. So you may well argue for a additional fiscal stimulus, and I might agree with you if we had the space, but there is no more space to do that. And that is why we're saying the trade-off that we should be making is not between SAA and pensioners' monthly grants. That's the trade-off that this government has chosen to make. We're saying that the trade-off we should be making is between millionaire managers in the civil service and the pensioners' payments. That's the trade-off we should be looking at.
We have replies to that. But Friday we continue, and we'll continue this debate. It's not going to be one solution. I'll give you 30 seconds, my dear.
No, I just really, it's a question again. The question is how? As an economist sitting here, I want to know how did we decide that there's no longer fiscal space? What is the merit of that argument?
Yeah, I knew you were going to say that, but he did offer an answer. This is a debate, okay? Right, thank you all. The chair is here. He will take over the second half with the fiscal. I will manage the fiscal study. I'll manage the timing for you to quickly.
So right.
Each of them gets 10 and then the 7 go over. Okay, I'll manage the timing. We'll make it easier.
Siyabonga ukuthi niyasamukela. Ngimzwile loyo othe ubethethe isithole. Sakusho lokwanyanga sona. Bathenga niyifakile uhulumeni bathu ukwenzela befake u-100. Uma sengena ungoweni wafa ku-80 sakhala basithi basasibongela sathi sijabuliseni ke noma lisikali ngonyaka. Bona besidinga nathi nyala zonke ngoba iy'ndleko ziyafana. Okunye asizile ngenti, asikali sekuyiminyaka. Siyaqonda uma sigwakalapha. Kodwa nathina phela sekubuhlungu uba njalo nidani niyasizwa. Ake sibone elusweni kwenu ukuthi kwenzekalani. Ngoba nini enkalayo uyanibona. Laba abanye sebasazi. Niyasizwa siyabonga. Kodwa phela ke kube khona oncane ngempela. Nathi niyavumelana nobuhlungu bethu elibuzwayo. Kwabaqalayo ayi ngiyakhulisa sekukaningi sekusekhaya siyabonga ma kubekeke kabi asinalo udlamu ngoba nabantwana baze bathi bafisa ukuthi sithathe imali bathi izinto eSouth Africa zilunga le mali bathi thinathini asibadingi ngoba bazodestroy sifuna ukukhuluma njengomlomo kuze kwenzeke awusizweni phela abantu asinadlame asinantamba asinami siyaxela.
Yeah, thank you, Chairperson. We hear that you are on our side. We apologize, therefore, if somewhere, somehow we've hurt you, but we are pleading with you to be with us. I can hear that there are new members, but to those who have been here, what we are saying is that we've been coming here again and again. Please help us, because we've even reported to our children. They said they are thinking of, you know, taking a march. They said that, you know, in South Africa, if you don't march, people don't hear you. But because we are not violent, we believe in peace, we therefore said, no, just wait, we are going there to negotiate and negotiate until our plea is heard. So please listen to our plea. We'll keep on coming to you. Thank you very much. We are sorry if we've hurt you.
Okay. Siyabonga. Our next presentation, Fiscal Thief Study Group, 12 minutes. Go.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I'm slightly rattled about the incident. Just bear with me if I look nervous. It's a state asset that was broken, Chair. Yeah, it works, but it will be the last day that we see this computer. So, Mr. Karim has drawn attention to the fact that this is a new parliament, this is a new committee, and hence the Fiscal Cliff Study Group saw fit to start by repeating what we've said to the last administration over the past 5 years, just to bring the current committee up to speed. Mr. Karim rightly during the discussion said, we have members here that were not here during the past 5 years. So our first point is South Africa faces a fiscal cliff. We've said for the last 5 years, give SAA away, it will not fly. If we've given it away 5 years ago, we would have saved 20 billion rand, serious money. To give a 13th check to the pensioners will cost 6.4 billion rand. 20 billion can fund that for 3 years. And we are trying. Then we've said repeatedly, buy only vehicles manufactured in South Africa for the government vehicle fleet. There's no reason why government departments, politicians, etc. should be in imported vehicles. So we define the fiscal cliff as the point where the compensation cost of employees plus social assistance payments plus debt service costs will account for 100% of government tax revenue, and at the moment we are at 72.3%. And of this, 46% is for civil service remuneration. And please note, we measure civil service remuneration as a percentage of revenue, not of expenditure. Because if you measure as a percentage of expenditure, and government overspends, as is happening this year, suddenly the percentage spent on government wages come down. It's a very perverse outcome. If government overspends, the argument becomes we are spending less on the civil service, which is simply not true. You have to measure this on the income side, as the Minister of Finance has indeed done in the budget. We've been warning about this fiscal cliff for the past 5 years. Please, we must also remember during the past 5 years, unfortunately, we had in South Africa what I call VICs, very important crooks. We need to bring these crooks to book. We need to see action against VICs in South Africa to take the country forward. The whole argument, of course, about an austerity budget, I must stress that over the past decade, South Africa did not have an austerity budget. Deficits before borrowing of up to 6% of GDP cannot be defined as an austerity budget. And it's because we spent very irresponsibly over the past decade that we are in the position where we are. We have no options left but to rein in expenditure. For those of you interested, I give you the background to the fiscal cliff. You can see where we're heading. When we did the work the first time in 2014, we would have run out of money by 2024. Things then started looking better as government took the necessary steps up to 2052. And let me admit, then I relaxed because by then I will be dead. But unfortunately, it's now moved back to about 20, 2042, and I hope to still be alive by then. And literally, the government will run out of money if we continue as we are going. We just cannot continue doing what we are doing. We are going to run out of money. We've said it the past 5 years, we are now at the point where the government is admitting we are running out of money. So state-owned enterprises, please, Eskom is the biggest headache. We must stop all bonus payments at all state-owned enterprises permanently. We have no justification for that. The risks that the managers at state-owned enterprises take do not justify bonuses, period. These are not bonus payments, these are bogus payments. They make rules to suit themselves. And then please open Eskom's board meeting to the public, to the media. It's a state-owned enterprise in a monopoly. If they want to hide anything, we should be very suspicious. Eskom should be very transparent. They are operating for the account of taxpayers. Open them for taxpayer scrutiny. Make their board meetings public, like parliament sessions are public. After all, they do it for our account. Then vehicles manufactured in South Africa. The previous committees followed the advice of the Fiscal Cliff Study Group, wrote a letter to the executive recommending purchase of vehicles manufactured in South Africa, never got a response. Please, can I ask this committee to repeat what the previous committee did? Namely, write to the executive and suggest only vehicles manufactured in South Africa. It will stimulate our economy by 38 billion rands a year by just making that simple change. Then the announcement, of course, of vehicles for officials, executives. It is very strange to see that the original copy of the budget said 700,000 rands inclusive of VAT, which suddenly and inexplicably changed to 800,000 rands. So somebody somewhere wants more from taxpayers. I suggest that this committee insist on the amount being taken back to 700,000 rands. There's an immediate saving that can be done now. Take it back to 700,000 rands. I even have a copy of the original budget speech reporting 700,000 rands. So I strongly recommend that this committee keep the executive accountable, take them back to the original amount of 700,000 rands. And only vehicles manufactured in South Africa. We heard Kusatu saying earlier, a new initiative to build vehicles in South Africa. Let's support them by government purchases, by executive purchases in South Africa. Then, on government employees. The government employees' remuneration bill has grown above the rate of inflation consistently over the past decade, somewhere between 2.5 and 3 percentage points above inflation with no economic growth in the country. We've now reached the point where the civil service is clearly unaffordable. We cannot continue as we did. So, if we then look back over the past 5 years, I must remember you of substantial tax increases that South Africa already had to face, amongst others, to afford its civil service. I point out to you the third and the second bullets, the increase in marginal tax rates on individuals. We've reached the point where just over 500,000 taxpayers contribute 40% of the tax revenue that the government gets from individuals comes from just over 500,000 people, admittedly top earners, but
Professor,
these are...
you're at 8, right?
Sorry?
You're at 8.
Yes. These are the people that can emigrate. So we must be careful that we don't raise taxes to the extent that the tax base will emigrate. So our findings and recommendations. The fiscal cliff barometer is deteriorated. We are moving closer to the fiscal cliff. We need a moratorium on civil service appointments. We cannot afford any more expenditure on civil servants. The all-inclusive remuneration adjustments, including the general adjustment, notch increases and promotions, must be limited to inflation. We can no longer give the generous adjustments we've had during the past decade. That's the reason why civil service remuneration accounts for 46% of tax revenue. I've made the point about vehicles. I must stress the point. The government must apply this rule with rigor. Previously, when this was announced, every cabinet minister, every MEC just did what they want and paid no attention to it. There were no consequences when a similar limit was previously raised, and this time it must be applied with rigor, and we recommend at the level of 700,000 rands. And then lastly, open ESCOM board meetings to the public, to the media, to ensure transparency and to enhance scrutiny. Thank you very much.
Thanks, South African Institute of Chartered Accountants, SICA, 10 minutes.
Honourable members, again, a privilege once again to be here. I want to start off with a quote by Minister Tito Mboweni, where he basically said, "Our problem is we're spending more than we earn. It's as simple as that." And it actually is. If you look at the graph, and almost there. Okay. Our revenue is way below our expenditure. And what does that mean? If we don't have enough money to pay for our expenditure, we have to borrow money. And if we have to borrow money, we have to pay interest, as we've been discussing now. The problem is our debt is getting more, and it's becoming unsustainable. So we're sitting with a 306 billion rand deficit, loss. So what do we do? How do we reduce that loss? Because the bigger our losses get, the more we have to borrow. We're sitting with 3 trillion rand worth of debt. That's going up to about 4 trillion in 2000 and, in 3 years' time. That was, and sitting at, 71% of GDP. It was 25% in 2009. Oh, are we back? Are we on? There we go. Okay, so that's our debt figure. The graph is galloping away from us, and it has to be reeled in. So let's just put this into simple terms. Let's look at our current year. What are we doing? Well, we've got income of 1.5 trillion. We've got expenses of 1.8 trillion, leaving us with a deficit of that 306 billion. Our debt, 3 trillion, going up to 4.4 trillion in 3 years' time. 71% of GDP, as I said, it was 25% in 2009. So what we need to do is reduce these losses so that we don't have to incur more debt. How do we do that? Well, that's what we're going to have a look at now. There's two ways. One, we either increase our expenses, our income coming in, or we have to reduce our expenses. And we have to do that by at least 20%. So either our income is going to go up by 20% or our expenses need to be reduced by 20%. So let's start with the first option. Let's increase our income. So what we should be doing is we should be having more income than our expenses. We should be making a profit. We're not there yet. So let's just say let's try and break even. Let's make sure that our income equals our expenditure. And that has to equal it by 306 billion rand. Or we have to reduce our expenses by the 306 billion rand. Now, keep that figure in mind as I carry on. Let's look at increasing income. The minister mentioned he's going to do that by way of tax increases come the February budget. As we've heard now, we've had a whole lot of tax increases in the last 3 years. Carbon tax been introduced this year. Sugar tax been introduced this year. VAT, the rate, increased from 14 to 15%. Donations tax, estate duty went up. Capital gains tax went up. Dividends tax rates went up. Fuel levies increasing on a huge every single year.
taxpayers are saying, I'm paying these costs, but I'm getting absolutely no benefit for them. And that is decreasing our compliance behavior and is causing problems in the revenue collection cycle. So where do we stand? If we look at our economic position, do we have scope to increase our taxes? Well, if we look at our tax to GDP ratios, it's sitting at 29.3%. The world average is 15.4%. Is that a bad thing? Well, having a high debt to GDP ratio, a tax to GDP ratio, is not a bad thing if you are getting value for money. Denmark, for instance, has a very high one. And they recently did a poll and asked the government, their taxpayers, and they're sitting, I think, about a 60% tax rate. Can we increase your taxes more? It was unanimous that it was yes. Go ahead, increase our taxes. Why? Because they're getting value for their taxes. So the higher rate is not an issue, but we need to show value for the cost that we're actually spending. The tax electricity, and sorry, there's a mistake there, the tax buoyancy is also decreasing. Both of them are decreasing. We've got high corporate tax rates. I know you're saying that we need to increase corporate tax rates. We're going to lose our corporates. If we look at no one wants to invest here, they're not going to come here. Our tax rate is already one of the highest in the world. And if we do that, we're going to seriously jeopardize our economy and any foreign direct investment coming into South Africa. Personal tax rates, also one of the highest in the world, and I'll get to that just now. And then obviously we have a low savings culture and we are heavily indebted as individuals. So increasing taxes more is not going to solve that problem. But let's get back to what the personal tax rates are. So the rates are high, we get that, but that's not actually the big problem. The big problem here is that South Africa is dependent on a small number of taxpayers paying this tax. Previous speaker mentioned it's the exact figure is 544,000 people paying 52% of our taxes. So more than half of our taxes is only being paid by 544,000 people. We know 29,000 of those people are not going anywhere. They're staying here, they're doing well. But the rest of them are highly mobile, and they are planning on leaving. We're introducing a change to in terms of Section 1010 to tax foreigners abroad. People are getting fed up, they're changing their residency, they're selling their assets, and they're leaving South Africa. And these are the people that are paying the taxes. If they go, we are not going to get any income in. So we need to keep these people here, and we need to get more people into this particular bracket. So can we increase our taxes? Well, at this stage, we've reached the tip of the Laffer curve. What does that mean? It means if we increase taxes now, we're not going to get any other additional income. In fact, it's going to decrease, and that we are seeing happening. Our revenue is not increasing the way it should have been, considering the rates that we're increasing it at. So what we should be doing, and it seems absolutely counterintuitive, is we should be lowering the tax rates. I know it sounds absolutely crazy and out there, but it will. Our taxpayer base is overburdened, they're dissatisfied, and increasing it now is just going to reduce compliance and payment of taxes. We're very happy, though, with the allocation of additional $1 billion to SARS and $1.3 billion to the NPA. That will definitely help strengthen their collection capabilities and combat the corruption that's been happening. And this will definitely yield returns many times over. So let's look at our second option, which is to reduce debt. So we do that by cutting our expenditure, making sure that we're not spending more than we're earning. Well, if we look at it, we're currently spending $1.8 trillion, and that goes up to $1.9 trillion, up to $2.2 trillion in 3 years' time. We are not cutting expenditure at all. We are increasing it, meaning our debt is going to increase, meaning we're going to have to pay more interest so that we can't pay the people that actually need it, like the Gorgon that's been speaking. So, who are the main culprits in this? So we've chatted this morning already. We know it's the government wage bill and our SOEs. And maybe I can put this in perspective. Here's a very nice graph that was released by the minister, and he went to great lengths to say what the problem here actually is. If we look at their salaries in 2006 and 2007, that was a starting point. Let's assume that was reasonable. We obviously had to adjust that by inflation. That's the next high gray block. The number of increase in the staff was not big at all. So the reason for the increase in salaries is not because they got more people. They had to pay more people. The people didn't increase that much. But the problem is that $159 billion. They got paid more than inflation. The people that are there got paid more than what an inflationary increase is. It works out at approximately 9% increase per year, which is more than our growth and our inflation rate. How is that even possible? Take that $159 billion and remember that $306 billion rand that I asked you to remember, our loss that we've made, that's half of our loss wiped out. If we all, we can redeploy this, which we should be doing, but it's half of our loss gone. Money for no extra services, no extra work.
So, as we know, 29,000 are earning more than a million. The average salary, as said by the minister, is 393,000 rand. We also have the Government Employees Pension Fund, which has the defined benefit scheme, which very few people have, which is a huge cost to the fiscus. So that should be one of the reasons why their salary should actually be lower than the private sector rather than higher. Private sector, we're sitting with 15.5 million people unemployed, basic wage 2.5 to 3.5 per month, and the average salary in the private sector is 250,000 rand according to Stats SA. So there is definitely an unbiased fairness here that has to be addressed, because if we don't cut these costs, we are going to run into problems. If we move on to our next culprit, the SAEs, I mean, we discussed this at length. The biggest culprit here, obviously, is Eskom, but we do realize that if we don't sustain them, it's essential for the functioning of our economy. However, providing funding to an entity that has no permanent CEO, no permanent board in the corporate sector would be pure negligence, and that is what we are doing. So we don't mind this, and that's why we encourage the strict requirements on this. But the question of providing loan versus equity actually really doesn't matter, because they're not going to be able to pay this money back. The competition, splitting it up into three, is good, and we do encourage this. Whether or not this will lead to new efficiencies, three different entities, three different boards, three different CEOs, I'm not so sure. And is it actually going to level the playing fields for some of our private sector power generators? Because that is what we need. They create the jobs. But the biggest problem here with SOEs is infrastructure spend. And the measly 630 million that we're planning on spending on infrastructure is not going to help any of these entities or any of us. And neither will it help the water crisis that is our next problem. So I just want to end with this example. If we're getting 100 rand in taxes, that's what you get. We're all getting, the government's getting 100 rand. 46 of that, as you mentioned previously, is going to the public sector wage bill. If this increases at the same rate that it's going now, in 2040, all of the income that we get will just be going to the public sector wage bill. There will be no money for anything, for pensions, for nothing. Nothing will be left. The rest goes to debt services costs, social grants, and our SOCU payments, leaving us with 26 rand to spend on nursing houses, teachers, schools, laboratories, etc. Now, if we say we have to cut the expenditure by 20%, that means that we have only 6 rand left to fund all the other expenditure that our country so desperately needs, the people in the rural areas, the poorest of the poor, because that's where the social spending should be going. But at the moment, it is all going mostly to the public sector. So what do we need to do? We need to reduce crime, and I just want to say the big thing here is the solution is actually quite simple. We need to cut down our expenditure, because if we don't, we are going to run out of money, as was mentioned previously. If we don't have money, we are not going to be here next year or the year after that. So I please implore all of you, this is our last chance. You have 3 months left to make sure that the executives in this government are using our financial resources to the best of their ability and for the benefit of everyone in our country. Thank you.
Thanks, Saika. Now we're getting into the tobacco industry. They've reinforced it. Yes, my friend, Tobacco Institute, South Africa. You have been here several times. You know how to manage time.
Chair, thank you, and Honourable Karim, thank you, and Honourable Members, thank you again. To the new administration, I was here last year to, for the first time, raise the issue of illicit tobacco trade to Parliament and the losses that it brings to government. I apologise humbly to Honourable Karim if we made a mistake by bringing too many people, but I will use my 7 minutes to explain to everybody why we thought it was the right thing. The elite of the tobacco industry is not what I've brought with me. I'm the head of the Tobacco Institute, and we represent the full value chain. We thought it fit because we are so serious about the problem. We respect this process. We respect this committee. Since I've introduced this concept last year, more than a year ago, that I brought some value chain partners. The elite is not here. I'm a tobacco farmer in the deep rural area of Limpopo, where I have a fellow farmer here who will speak after me, Shadrick, and Jabulani from the Mpumalanga province. We are tobacco farmers who at this stage have no hope of a crop, even forget about reduced salaries or freezing of salaries because of the drought out there, number one. And number two, our market is disappearing, not because of South Africans smoking less, but because it is disappearing into the pockets of criminal syndicates who avoid paying tax to this government. And that is why we thought it would be good if I bring some value chain partners here. We will also have here the processor of our leaf. We have here the buyer of our leaf, who is also seeing their market disappearing into the pockets of criminal companies who operate in a radius of 60 kilometers from SARS and who is stealing 10 billion rand this year alone from government. That is the elite in the tobacco industry. We are not the elite. We are here to respect this process, and I apologize, Honorable Karim, if we made a mistake, but that was our thinking. So, Honorable Chair, we have a parallel in this country. We have a tobacco industry who is legal, and I've brought some value chain partners. These value chain partners are responsible for just about 95% of the excise paid in the tobacco industry, which is due. As I showed you last time, and I've included the slide again, honorable members, is South Africans are actually smoking more. And that is not good news, because the health objective of this government is for people to reduce the consumption of harmful products. And we support that. But what is happening on the contrary is that people are actually smoking less. The problem is they're smoking less of the legal product and more of the unregulated, cheap, untaxed, illegal product. How can we ever curb smoking if kids can buy cigarettes on the street outside of Parliament here for 10 rand a packet, where the tax alone on a packet of cigarettes is almost 20 rand? We will get nowhere. And as by Treasury's own admittance over the last year, is despite excise increases, they started seeing a drop in income. And that is exactly the problem. So in a nutshell, South Africans smoke between 31 and 35 billion cigarettes a year. That's the reality, and it's growing. Tax is paid only on 17 to 19 billion, and that is the value chain partners that I've brought along with me. These are the legally compliant tax-paying value partners. Coming from deep rural areas like myself and like SADRAC and our leaf buyers and our leaf processors, who all suffer because of this. So we are here to help government to make a proposal, as I've made before, to get that gap, because the potential is 10 billion at least. Honorable Karim will remember last year I reported a 5 billion loss to government. That has grown to 8 billion. We are now looking at least 10 billion plus that the fiscus will lose this year. 52.5 billion or whatever is the estimated shortfall. If you can imagine from one commodity, which is in the radius of 60 kilometers from SARS, is stealing 10 billion from the fiscus, it can wipe out 20% of the 52 billion shortfall. And it's low-hanging fruit. And we made a proposal, it's a multi-pronged approach required, and I'll go straight to our recommendations, but I want to show you that the potential of tax collection from the tobacco industry is at least 10 billion rand, and it's not difficult to get there. We've made a proposal, it's one proposal, we've made many proposals to SARS, which relates to enforcement. We helped SARS, we do the research. We said to SARS, put officials in factories, get factories audited on a regular basis. We'll help you upskill the people to audit the tobacco value chain. We asked SARS to register tobacco farmers so that we know where all the leaf goes. Those are all related to enforcement actions. But you also have this issue of taxation. And as I said last time, the government is actually the biggest shareholder in the tobacco industry. On a packet of cigarettes costing 35 rand, which is a legal pack, 60% goes to government. Government is a huge shareholder, and that is getting lost. We need to get the volumes to get back to the legal industry and the legal value chain so that they can pay the tax and government can increase, and then products will become more expensive and consumption will decline. So one of the things we asked for, and I plead with the Honourable Committee, Honourable Chair, to help us again, because we said one of the drivers of illicit cigarettes is price. And I explained to you now that tax is the biggest factor in driving cost. So by freezing the excise on cigarettes, you will reduce the carrot for those criminals stealing 10 billion to make that money for themselves.
1 minute left.
Thank you, Jane. Treasury did not accept our proposal. We come back and we plead with you. If Treasury retains the excise levels at 40%, which is targeted the incidence, they will in fact make more money because they've gone beyond the point where you get to the point of diminishing returns. One last point, Chair, is that the Treasury themselves, and you'll see it in my presentation, their targeted incidence on all tobacco product categories is 40%. In other words, pipe tobacco, cigarettes, roll your own cigarette tobacco, all those, the targeted incidence for excise is 40%. That's fine. But on cigarettes, they have creeped well over 43%. So they've gone against their own policy. So what we are pleading them, if they don't want to reduce the tax incidence below 40%, remain with the 40% then. Because Treasury said it is 40% on all categories, but Treasury also admitted that on cigarettes they've gone beyond 40% at 43.3%. So we are pleading with this committee to take our plea on board and let Treasury just stick to their own policy, which is 40%. We know they can't bring it back from 43 to 40, but if they hold it where it is for a year or two or three, it will automatically, with cost increases, come back to 40, and then we will be happy, sir. The value chain partners here will pay more taxes, more farmers in deep rural areas will be able to hold their jobs, and if God bless us with rain, we can make our contribution in this country in very deep rural areas. Our buyer will not be necessary to disinvest, and our processes will not be necessary to disinvest in small little towns like Heidelberg and Rustenburg, where they keep those towns alive. I thank you, Chair.
Point made. I know how passionate you are about your industry. So, just that we don't have enough time today. We also have to go to another meeting at 1 of Chairperson, 2 o'clock, for the city.
So, Chairperson.
Then to be... The British American Company.
Yes, that's me, Chair. Okay. I'll just talk to it instead of projecting the presentation, Chair. So we are also making our second appearance here. We first came to see you on the 12th of September, upon which Treasury responded to our submission. And the reason why we come here is in the context of the budget, the medium-term budget policy statement that the Minister released on the 30th. Alongside that, Treasury reissued their report that they made to this committee. And for us, we truly appreciate and understand that MTPPS focus the future revenue needs and sets out government priorities over the next 3 years. And we also understand that the minister's pronouncements in the MTPPS are not final, which is why this public process consultation is very important to us. Hence, we came to raise the two most pertinent points that came out of the report from Treasury, which actually my colleague who just spoke a few minutes ago touched on, which is actually the incident of excise, which Treasury itself had set at 40%, yet in our submission where we said let's revert back to the policy, they declined actually to approve that request. In their revised joint presentation on the 30th of October, Treasury responded to our proposal to hold excise rates for the next 3 years by stating that this was not accepted because there's an excise tax policy to increase excise either by inflation or by the targeted incidence, which is 40%, and whichever is higher on an annual basis. And totally we agree with that approach. I mean, it's policy, so we comply with policy. With regards to our second proposal, which is where you would recover where you have frozen, for example, excise on cigarettes, we said increase on pipe tobacco, which has the same risk as cigarettes. Treasury yet again said this proposal was not accepted because they target actually the most popular tobacco product, which would be the one that sells most in the country, and even then the incidence would be 40%. And they said they do this because cigarettes make up the majority of the market. So two very concrete and very clear and unequivocal responses to this. Yet, Treasury has also not complied with its own policy. They are currently sitting at an incidence of 43.3%. And if we continue along this rate, so they will be way above the current target of 40%. And even with inflation this year and last year, they were above inflation as well. So two missteps. So as business, we rely on consistency as well as policy certainty to be able to actually, you know, do our work. So therefore, we support their targeted incidence of 40%, and our submission is that Treasury can indeed achieve this 40% incidence gradually by putting in place a plan to bridge this gap over the next 3 years. So what are our recommendations? I'll just jump straight into it. Our view is that a reduction in the current rate of excise will not achieve the end result of 40%. We are not asking for a reduction in excise. Our proposal is actually to hold or freeze the current excise rate so that you will gradually go back to your 40% incidence. And this, coupled with what Francois had already spoken about earlier on, speaking to enforcement, which is very critical to actually make sure that there is compliance with tax and that all people that have a responsibility to pay tax actually do pay this tax so that we don't lose a lot of the money and the revenue that is due to the fiscal to criminal syndicates. We therefore submit that excise rates should not be based on price increase of the most popular cigarette category. And by way of example, in terms of how we can achieve this, a likely recommended retail price of, for example, 1.50 on a pack of cigarettes, along with an excise freeze, will reduce the incidence from 43% this year to about 41.7% next year. So gradually, you will start going back to the policy incidence that is 40%. This will also serve to close the gap in relation to Treasury's targeted incidence of 40%, but at the same time also stimulate compliance, because at the moment, you are starting to lose more of your volumes into the illegal industry. Our projection is that if this were to be done, either by complying with the policy or inflation, we will at least start to bridge this gap and be able to reduce from the current 43.3%. And this will also stimulate revenue generation and have tax flow back into the fiscal rather than a lot of this money leaking into the illicit trade. So that is just our simple message, Chairperson. It's just about policy consistency and certainty so that we can all be comply, be able to comply and understand what we are working with. Thank you.
Thanks, BIT. You used 5 minutes. Limpopo Tobacco Professor.
Honorable Chairperson, thank you for the opportunity. Now, obviously, without labouring the challenges of the tobacco industry, I would just like to take a few minutes just to emphasise the actual plight of the farmers in South Africa. Now, I'm the managing director for Limpopo Tobacco Processors, and we are basically the primary industry in South Africa, and we consist of 100 commercial farmers and 140 black emerging farmers. And LTP has the only green processing facility in South Africa. We obviously produce tobacco in the northern regions of Limpopo, Mpumalanga, and Northwest, and we employ in the region of 6,500 people in mostly arid rural areas of these provinces, with close on 20,000 dependents. Now, since 2013, the South African tobacco crop dropped from over 12 million to less than 10 million kilograms this year, which is more than 20%. And hectares plummeted, obviously, in the same ratio. The high cost of production in South Africa obviously limits the viable offshore markets, and therefore we sell predominantly our crop to domestic buyers and creating a revenue of 600 million rand for farmers. And as Mr. van der Merwe mentioned, in 2018 the Ipsos report clearly confirmed that 42% of the informal market is controlled by illicit market, costing the country in the region of 8 billion rand every year. Now, we at LTP experienced this firsthand as we saw and experienced the drop in orders from our domestic buyers to such an extent that we had to implement quotas for the first time in the history of our industry, which is more than 100 years old. And obviously that created immense amount of revenue loss and job losses. And now with the smaller crops being produced, obviously it makes it less viable for most of these farmers to continue. So, Mr. Chair, apart from this evil, any further increases in taxes will obviously have a devastating effect on our industry. And therefore, we have the same request as my previous two speakers. Obviously, the appointment of Mr. Kiesbetter as Commissioner of SARS, I think, is a feather in the cap of the President. However, we know that it will take several years to crack down on these crime syndicates that control a well-established and organized illicit cigarette trade. Therefore, LTP kindly requests the Honourable Minister of Finance to bring the excise rates on cigarettes back in line with the 40% targeted incidents. And in conclusion, Mr. Chairman, the primary tobacco industry has a flawless record in South Africa, and we employ thousands of people in the rural areas. And it will continue to do so, but responsible taxation will be critical for the sustainability and the future of our farmers. Thank you.
Thanks. We only took 3 minutes. Thanks very much. Black Tobacco Farmers Association, BTFA. Ngiyabonga lozi sihlalweni ngibonge nakuwe uthizolana ngobe umuntu obuye emakhaya uyakwazi izinto awukhuluma ngako ukhulele kuko ubonile uhlala kuko kungikolo lokulethe bomazi la lokubuhlungu kakhulu kimi umuntu okhuluma nje sinto sakithi ukuthi uma ukhuluma ngemakhaya deep rural ukhuluma ngebantu labangayo esikolweni iningi labo labaphila ngama-grant uhulumente kuthi ngalesikhathi kuba nendlela letawasita kuthi bakhone kusebenza kuze babalekele ama-grant babuyise isithunti sabo.
Okay, so, just a second. I will allow him to speak in the next round. Who can summarize after we have presented? Just.
I think he can continue.
Yeah, let's not do simultaneous translation, I mean, interpretation. Let him present for 7 minutes and then when you summarize what you have presented. Yeah.
Thank you, Chair,
for another 5 minutes.
We welcome the Minister of Finance invitation for members of the public to make input as he prepares his full budget speech of 2020 season. The Black Tobacco Farmers Association, BTFA, is less than a year old, but already represents more than 160 in 4 provinces across South Africa. There are 10,000 livelihoods in some of the most historically disadvantaged areas of this country that depends on tobacco farming. These 10,000 jobs support approximately 30,000 men and women and children who depend on the income derived from the soil of our nation to nourish and educate and transform them. Our farmers only supply legal manufacturers of tobacco products, businesses that produce in South Africa that are taxed properly and therefore deliver billions of rand in revenue to the government. Our members currently sell 100% of their product to Limpopo Tobacco Processors, LTP, for the processing and onward sale to British American Tobacco, BASA. Key issues affecting black tobacco farmers. We are affected by the huge market in illegal cigarettes in South Africa, and this has been allowed to flourish. We formed the BTA because we are proudly South Africans and want to this country and our people not to only survive but thrive. At this point in time, almost of all the cigarettes sold in this country are not only illegal in that they pay no tax, but they are also produced with foreign tobacco leaf. As a result, tobacco farming in South Africa is in the verge of total destruction, and our families are facing hopeless future. The tobacco being used in the illegal cigarette is imported from cheap producers such as Zimbabwe, Malawi, and Zambia. We have previously warned the Minister of Finance and the government that every time access taxes are increased on illegal cigarettes, that they are playing in the hands of the, they are playing into the hands of those foreign producers and their criminal customers at the expense of honest and law-abiding South Africans. Key issues affecting black tobacco farmers. Cigarettes are not only products, we know this, but they are legal. We have seen that repeated increases in excess tax have not made any difference on the overall level of smoking in the country. There is a reason for this. It's because people do not smoke the legal cigarette when taxes go up. This is a tragedy because tobacco growing has the potential to transform the entire rural communities in South Africa that have very few other resources. Our animals do not just produce tobacco. They have worked to diversify their farms by using the income from tobacco. This has allowed them to provide food security for thousands of the people and has given our members their families hope. The Limpopo Tobacco Processors LTP has warned that because of the continued reduction in demand levels, all caused by illegal cigarette trade, their business is fairly profitable and its entire future is in doubt. At the same time, BASA has warned us that if the current level of illegal cigarette sales by criminals does not decline, it may be forced to pull out of buying South African leaves altogether. Our request to you, Parliament, we ask that as our elected representatives, not only stand up for blacks, but stand up for South Africa. We do not approve any access increase on tobacco in this country without considering who are benefiting and who are hurting. Do not do something that has no effect on smoking rates. Do not do something that only makes taxi dodgers richer while making us poorer and more destitute.
I'll summarize in only 1 minute in Texas.
Kube-ke iPhalamende iyakuva lesicelako ukuthi sitivulele amathuba emsebenzi ngoba nawuvula ibhizinesi usho ucabangela abantu abakho ukuthi umnotho ukhule. Kodwa nakutaba nesigebengu ukuthi ungabhadala itesi itiyekelwe. Sitawuhlupheka siyodependa kuma-grants when we are trying to avoid that and earn our dignity. Thank you.
Therefore, anything to translate that in justice, although it was clear.
Okay, Chair, I was thinking that he was speaking English while he was presenting. Or the beginning. Yeah, the introduction when they make an intro was to say that they are from the rural area and they are making the submission from the poorest of the poor, and they are coming for the second time, and then the presentation is based on the people in the rural area to make a living out of the tobacco, and then also for them to making reference to the presentation of the elderly. So, Chairperson, I think in summary, that is what they were presenting.
And quote, Councilman Karim.
Thank you, Councilman Chair. Can we just alert our friends at the UN? People have a right to speak any language. You can come here and speak all the Khoisan languages. It is not for you to apologize. The problem is we've been trying since the mid-90s to get Parliament to have translation. Parliament does not have the capacity or the resources. It's extremely expensive. So what normally happens, my friend, I'm sorry about this, people request, like the Peter Melbourne Pensions Forum, request us to get an isiZulu translator. So we brought that person in, and once they finished, he left. Because they do all sorts of other work. So unfortunately, we didn't know you were going to speak in an indigenous language. So we apologize to you. You should feel free to speak in whatever language you want. And can we also ask the committee secretary, Alan Elikuleko, where you think it's relevant, like you don't want translation for the professor, Yanni. So, well, you might, Afrikaans, right? But, I mean, what I'm trying to say is, for the BJC guy at the right day, his name, I don't get it, you know, what translation do you require? But if you have disempowered communities, even if they can speak English or Afrikaans, they have a right to speak in any language. But can we ask the two of you just to do it? But we can't have on call permanent committee. There's 34 committees in Parliament.
Thank you so much, Chair. It wasn't for that. The only thing that is hurting to me most is the fact that it looks like no one understands the impact of illicit trade on cigarettes. Because that's really what is killing the industry.
I was certainly from last year, but go ahead, Comrade. Thank
you. Okay, we are done with the submissions. We'll release the Peter Maritzburg Pensioners Forum to go for lunch at the restaurant. Their lunch is ready. Then, in the meantime, we take questions from, and comments from members for the last batch of presentations. Members? Ryder? Yes. Hello, it's John. Kassan? Mavilet? Okay. In that order, Ryder?
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Thank you for the presentations. Yeah, some good information coming out of them, and it's interesting for me. Unfortunately, Mr. Parks has left us by the looks of things, but interesting that everyone else who's presented today seems to have a different opinion from him about the wage issues of government. So, I think Kosatu must be feeling a little bit lonely on that basis at the moment. I really liked some of the ideas from the Fiscal Cliff Study Group, and as well some of the information brought by Dr. Smulders from SICA. I think that very useful. Again, the lady who was representing the Peter Maritzburg Pensioners Forum, I'm sorry, I expected your question about the funding of certain members in this House, their parties, to be answered by one of the last four presenters, but that didn't appear to happen. Chair, I think that my next comment, I think, is pointed at ourselves, and it's important for us to ensure that in future expectations of presenters are managed beforehand so that people are well aware of the fact that they're going to have time constraints when they come up here to present, because I think we would have had a lot more benefit out of those presentations if people were aware that there's a process of yes, submit your full full submission, and then back it up in a short 5-minute presentation. I do think that it would have helped us if more people took the approach from the BJC and the FCSG, where they take a much broader point of view. Though I do understand that there are people here with narrow interest groups and wanting to highlight their own issues. I do want to also just emphasize the point that Honorable Hill Lewis made earlier, there is very little space for movement within the budget at the moment. Constructive submissions have been well received and given us some good food for thought. With some of the demands having to be tempered within the climate that we find ourselves in now. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks, Raja. Honourable Lewis.
Professor, thank you very much for your presentation. Who am I to argue with the head of the economics department? But let me just, if I may, gently probe one thing that you said. You also spoke correctly about the public sector wage bill, but called for a freeze across the board. Now, my view, and this is why I said earlier that it's one of those rare occasions that I agree with the presentation made by Kosatu, South Africa obviously needs many more civil servants, public servants at the coalface of service delivery. Many more teachers, many more doctors, surgeons, social workers, police officers, and so on. As you know, in most public schools today, teachers are teaching 50 children, or close to 50 children. It's totally unsustainable. So again, you know, we have, I think that the proposal that you've made is a little bit of a blunt instrument with respect, because it's across the board cuts to the entire civil service. Instead of, I think there's a proposal on the table that says that we can actually target the cuts where the waste is the most, and that is at the upper echelon, the highest echelons of the civil service, where there's a lot of evidence of significant bloat and overpayment premium. So I'd like your views on that. And then another question to you, Professor. I happen to agree with your view that there is no additional room for fiscal stimulus in South Africa at the moment. The kind of policy options that would be available to a government in a downturn in the ordinary course of the business cycle are simply not available to our government now because of the reasons you outlined very eloquently and which I don't need to repeat. But that is not the view held by one of the earlier presenters from the budget coalition who have made the argument that additional fiscal stimulus is still possible and that we can continue to spend. So I think this is a crucial debate for South Africa, because over the next few years we are going to have to endure some very painful, very difficult cuts, and we need to make sure that those cuts are targeted in a way that does not affect services to the poor or minimizes that effect to the greatest extent possible. And so I'd just like your view on whether fiscal stimulus is still available and to what extent it is.
Thanks, Louis.
Chair, thank you very much. Chairperson, in terms of the tobacco, the impact on the legal and the illegal trade and how it is affecting, obviously, I think is very good understood. And then also, I would just want to check in terms of the latest on the Asta, what do you call it, Aruguana, where does that feature into the tobacco manufacturing? And then, Chair, I would want to make a proposal to say that according to the Constitution, Chapter 2 of the Constitution, it's very clear in terms of the Bill of Rights. When you look at all the presentations that was made in terms of the state has to respect, protect, and promote. So my proposal is to say that from the presentation, so that we don't have a similar situation as this administration, when presenters come and then tomorrow we repeat the same thing, so that we have a clear progress in terms of we have listened, we have heard, we put things together to have a summary of all the presentations very clearly stipulated from our advisors, and also to with clear recommendations for the committees, which is the Appropriation Committee and the Finance Committee, so that we can refer these matters to the relevant people. So for progress, so that we don't repeat to say that come back and do the same thing again. So that will be my take, Chair.
Thanks,
Thanks, Honorable Chair. My first question is to the fiscal cliff study group. Well, I'm partly covered by Honorable Hill Lewis, where you are saying that you are recommending that we put a moratorium on civil service appointment. Well, the first question they would say, for how long should we have that moratorium? But secondly, how do we manage that versus the challenge of service delivery on the ground? Because as we speak, I think we got shortage of nurses in hospitals and in clinics. So how do we manage that? The second question on to the SAICA. We are making a point there where we are saying that part of your recommendation, we are saying that we need to cut the rate of expenditure growth. And we make another point where you are saying that the rate of expenditure growth is not the same as cutting the rate of expenditure growth is not the same as cutting the actual expenditure. Can you elaborate on that? Versus the issue of inflation, because if my understanding is correct, if you a project that you could do with 10 million rand this year, in 2 years' time you can't do that same project with 10 million rand. So how do we, like we are saying, that we need to cut the rate of expenditure growth as opposed to cutting the actual expenditure? Thanks.
Thanks, Kosana. Honorable Mavida.
Thank you, Chair. Mine is just a comment. I just want to say to all the presenters that have presented today, it is clear that you have made your research, and I just want to say to you, value your time of coming here, because for me, your presentation was very much educative and empowering, and it also empowers us as Parliament, as this committee, to do our oversight very well. Meaning that we'll be able to follow up to everything that you have just said. And you will also escalate and follow, obviously, protocol and do everything in our utmost to show that you just came here, we presented, and we thank you for your time. Thank you.
Thanks, Honorable for compliment. Honorable
Yeah, no, I think what the last comment has said is important, right? Don't look at the form, look at the content, right? This is a process, but underlying it, what matters at the end of the day are the words on paper. So, Jordan, you can monitor me. I'll take 2 minutes. Okay, so the first thing is, on the Comrade Chair, you're a new chair, but I need to alert you this. For 2, maybe 3 years, Alan Wickham, if he's here, will know, we've written to the presidency, I've badgered the then deputy president and the president's parliamentary councillor, Mr. Connor, to reply to the point. The committee agreed. Ministers, deputy ministers, MECs, mayors, exco members at local government in a start, much by South African cars. So unless the committee, it's a legacy issue, Congress, that you'll have me to follow up on. I think we should repeat that recommendation, colleagues, and bring it to the committee, right? And this time we note that the chair, previous chairperson has tried. Actually, I would suggest if you had a social base, march to parliament, there's nothing more we can do, right? Or go to court. I think you should go to court. You have a right to an answer. So if we don't get a thing, this gentleman, whether he's a professor or not, has a right to go to court and say he's done it, the committee has done it, you know. Actually, in theory, we should call the president to answer if it has to be, right? So we're going to try again. We'll repeat the letter, the chair and I. There's no debate about this thing. There's parliament. Whether I'm the chair or he's the chair or somebody else takes over, parliament has taken that decision. We owe it to you. But we put in our recommendation. Then on the issue of the, you didn't certainly in 40 minutes with due respect to you. I mean, you didn't even use it. So we gave you 28 minutes. You used 20. Right. So I think it was correct not to give you 40 minutes. But the thing is that you see here, colleagues, the previous committee, I listen to you, I have my own views about whether you should smoke or not. As it happens, I don't smoke, right? But that's not the issue here. That's being dealt with by the health committee. It's a policy issue. Since smoking is not illegal, then we have no choice but to get the maximum revenue from it, especially in a context where we are far short of the revenue target we have projected for ourselves for the last two and more years. There's no choice about it. Illicit tobacco is worse than licit, in such a way, legal tobacco, because we don't know what goes in there. So insofar as they are being undermined by the illicit tobacco trade, they are right to come here. Never mind, personally I don't smoke, but morally and politically, as far as we are concerned, there's a case here. We can't lose 10 billion rounds like that, probably more. That's your estimate. So there, whatever I may think about cigarette smoking, you have my full support in that regard. And we took it forward, and in fact SARS has improved. And partly because of the pressure of this very committee, Comrade Chair. So my brother, you are not here, but us, your colleague there. It's because of us. Because I remember outside meetings, I found the SARS commissioner at the time, or the relevant person in the department. This chair would do that presumably. A lot of work gets done outside the committee. So I'm at 2:52, I've got 8 seconds left. On the issue of COSATU, with due respect to my friend there, Dennis Ryder, they can't be lonely 1.9 million card-carrying members. How many card-carrying members don't answer this question as the DA got? Thank you. That's exactly 3 minutes.
Okay. Thanks very much, Honorable Karim. And thanks very much to our guests. Pleasure is coming Friday. What time? Adam, what time is the meeting?
9.
And then, yeah. Now? Oh, they're not responding on Friday?
No, they're responding. And then Friday is there.
No. Adam, what is the procedure? Was another meeting of Chester?
I just agree that there is a procedure, and I don't know why the committee chair is so silent, but the previous time, after everybody spoke, you put questions to them. They have to reply now. The procedure on Friday is different. That National Treasury replying to all the issues you raised, you having the right to reply to them, they reply to you. But you have to reply to them. If you don't want to reply, that's your right. But Sayaka might have to reply. Do you have anything to say? Oh, my dear. Since the question raised, then you have to reply.
Chairperson, don't call people to reply when they don't want to. Okay. Let's allow you to another 20 minutes to reply, then we adjourn the meeting. The institute, the Black Farmers, the professor, and Saika. Yeah, let's move in this order. Chartered Accountants.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you for the question. A good question. I don't know if you've got my slides in front of you, but your question was the cutting the growth rate of expenditure is not the same as actually cutting expenditure. So if you look at my slide number 11, you'll see that the rate of expenditure actually goes down as a percentage of income, because the income goes up and then the expenses might come down, but the percentage there reduces. But the actual expenditure has actually gone up. The income might have also gone up, but that results in the percentage of expenditure looking as though it's coming down, but actually it's because of the income, not because of the expenditure. The expenditure has actually increased. So it's slide number 11, if you want to have a look at that, how the actual percentage looks as though it's declining, but the actual expenditure is going up.
Members, for the questions and also for the compliment, we highly appreciate it. We have been here many times before, we learn as we go along. The question of the marijuana, I would like to make it very clear that it's two completely different products. And the tobacco industry in South Africa, we do not deal in that. We do not grow it. We do not process it. We do not market it. We do not package it. We are not involved in that at all. But if tobacco goes down the drain, who knows? We might have to find an alternative, but for now the answer is no. Chair, the question on the recommendations is also well appreciated. I think if you read our written submissions that we've submitted, and it's been constant among all the value chain partners here, is that we are here to help. We fulfill a very important part in the economy of our country in terms of these are your taxpayers, and also in terms of jobs, not only in cities and factory towns, but also in rural areas. We are here to help, and we believe that our request is clearly articulated for National Treasury just to stick to their own policy. They've creeped above their policy, and that is part of the reason why you've driven cigarettes, legal cigarettes, because the legal people will always pay. You've driven the price of cigarettes so high, and tax is such a big driver of that, that you have created the black market, and as Honorable Karim says, you don't know what is in that product. Almost half of this market, over 40% of this market is illegal. We will not curb smoking. We will not increase taxes. So our respectful request is simply for National Treasury to stick to their own policy. And the consequence of that, we firmly believe, is that they will claw back the 10 billion that they are losing, because the gap will be reduced. Your legal players will get more volume, and they will pay the tax. So this is a clear, clear assistance from the industry side to help the committee, to help Treasury. The new commissioner of SARS is absolutely doing a phenomenal job. And the answer of Treasury that illicit tobacco trade is a matter of enforcement is not wrong. It's not wrong, but it's not the only thing. To get enforcement right, ask Mr. Kieswetter, is not going to happen overnight. He's got officials in factories, they're still running rings around SARS officials, they're still defrauding SARS of 8, 10, 12 billion this year. It's going to take time to get the enforcement right. And we support that process, and we support that response. But what we're asking is don't create a bigger incentive in the meantime by coming in February with another excessive increase in excise, because you will reduce further. And I don't want to be here in a year's time to say to the committee, you know, we've told you, you're going to get less even. I would like to be here to say by freezing the tax and by sticking to the policy, the income from tobacco is actually increased, the enforcement is getting in place, and we're all at a better space. Thank you very much.
Yeah, marijuana is a big product in the Eastern Cape. That's why the question comes from. So you might be losing out. There in Pondoland, there are big fields of marijuana. Yes, black farmers, tobacco farmers.
Thank you, Chair. It's unfortunate. Friday I won't be around because I need to be on the farm. I would have loved to pose my question to the minister himself so that he can answer. Because now, when you look at 42 market share in the hands of illicit, it means now our business is going to be destroyed altogether. Where to now? Going back to grants, that would be an unfortunate situation. I think the minister have to consider that. Thank you.
Professor.
Thank you, Chair. I was asked two groups of questions, one around the fiscal space and fiscal capacity of the government, one around civil service remuneration. I want to deal with the fiscal space and fiscal capacity first. For a decade, South Africa has used deficit financing, deficits up to 6% of GDP annually, in an attempt to try and stimulate economic activity. It's not worked. That is why we are in the mess that we are. So we cannot continue doing what we've done. We've not had austerity for 10 years. This is why we are in this mess. In short, if the South African government was a household, and anybody lent money to that household, they would probably have been guilty of contravening the National Credit Regulator regulations, because the household cannot show ability to repay the money that it is currently borrowing, which is contravention of the NCR regulations.
The South African government at this moment cannot show capacity to repay the money it's currently borrowing. So if this was a household, all lending to this household should have been stopped legally. That is the mess we are in. Let me turn then to the civil servants, and let me start by saying I am married to a civil servant. My wife is a school teacher. When I say there must be a moratorium on new appointments, the whole system suffers bureaucratic oversupply and too little delivery. There are too many people in head offices watching other people do the work. If I see the paperwork that my wife has to deal with, she teaches at a special needs school and she must complete paperwork about why people can't walk on a rope. Please, they're in wheelchairs. So there's complete bureaucratic oversupply, and these people sitting in head offices and in departmental offices should come back to the coal face, and then we will have enough nurses, we will have enough teachers. If we remove the bureaucratic oversupply from the national and provincial departments. As far as the moratorium is then concerned, I can only pronounce as far as I can see in terms of the current MTBPS. There's no fiscal space, no scope, no capacity for increases over the term of the next 3 years of the MTBPS, which is what is under consideration here. I must just stress that I didn't say no increases. I said remuneration increases, including notch increases, promotions, etc., general increases, not exceeding the rate of inflation. So the civil service remuneration bill can grow at the rate of inflation, but nothing above that. But the real answer to the question, which is a very valid question, how long will we probably need this? We will probably need this until civil service remuneration is down to 33% of government revenue, a third of government revenue from the current level of 46%, which will bring us in line with our emerging market peers, other economies in the world. If the committee wishes, I can bring a presentation on our peers next year in February when we debate the national budget. Thank you very much, Chair.
Prof, I think we have come to the end of today's public hearing. So we'll meet again on Friday. Allow me say it's 9 o'clock. Okay, 9 o'clock. Treasurer will be here to respond to the issues that you have faced. Thank you very much. We take what you present very, very serious. We were telling somebody yesterday from FFC who said, yeah, you don't take our recommendations very serious. We said we don't write our report like writing books where we put reference to say according to Tobacco Institute, parliamentary reports are not written in that manner. So we have got our way of compiling reports and making recommendations. So we don't call you here for academic exercise. This is not a university. It's a law-making institution where we take the views of the public very seriously because we have been elected. We're not appointed. So if we don't take the views of the public serious, whom are we representing? It means we represent our debt. So we take whatever comes from the constituencies very, very, very serious. And you will see when we meet on Friday with Treasurer. They have to be scientific in responding to the issues that you raise. They don't have to come here just talk in general terms. Otherwise, we want to adopt the report in the legislature. Because at the end, it's Parliament that appropriates. It's not them. They are Treasury. We are Parliament. So we don't want people to live here and think, we just presented. Will they take our views? We take your views very, very, very serious. We don't take views from somewhere else. Whatever comes from you in a written form, orally, others submit in a written form, electronically. We study that. We have got a team here. Those people you see at the back of researchers, content advisors, and so on and so on, who advise us as what is it that we have to do to make sure that the views of the public are factored in our reports. So thank you very much. Let's meet on Thursday. The meeting is adjourned.